Good morning, everybody, and welcome to today's council meeting. We'll begin with the introduction, and it's a great pleasure to introduce Ben Doerr with the Northridge Presbyterian Church. Northridge Church has been a spiritual arena for fostering Christian education in the Dallas community now for over 100 years. Mr. Doerr, thank you very much for performing the invocation. Please rise.
Let us pray. Holy and gracious God, help our choices this morning be ones that tip the balance, in favor of the poor and those who are weighed down. Let us be a people, O God, committed to sharing wealth that was never ours to hoard, a people committed to speculating in hope and settling for dividends of solidarity. Give us strength, O God, to root out injustice, be it large or small. Give us the courage to use power wisely, to make judgments with compassion, and to recognize our own limitations. We give you thanks, O God, for creating us in your image. Help us to see that image in the faces of our colleagues and in the people of this city. Amen.
Amen. Ms. Salazar, could you lead us in pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the Father, of the United States of America, and to the Republic,
God. Well, again, good morning to everybody. We begin this morning by turning it over to our Deputy Mayor Pro Tem, Pauline Medrano. Ms. Medrano, I believe you have a proclamation.
Yes, sir, I do, and I would like for Sarah Drewling and Peggy Nolan to step up to receive. They are here representing the American Lung Association, and we have a proclamation. Colleagues, a few weeks ago, Christy Yamaguchi, the Olympic gold medalist and winner of Dancing with the Stars, was here in Dallas, and she is a spokesperson for the Faces of Influenza, and I know that is a important topic to all of our communities, and she is, of course, stressing the importance of immunization for the seasonal flu. Dallas is one of 13 cities that they're rolling out this this initiative, and we're happy to have these two ladies representing the American Lung Association. So I have a proclamation to read. It reads, whereas the best and safest way to prevent influenza is through receiving an annual vaccination influenza. Influenza is a serious respiratory illness causing an average of 36,000 deaths and more than 200,000 hospitalizations each year. Whereas every year, influenza immunization rates fall short, even though more than 4 out of 5 people, nearly 250 million in the United States, are recommended to get vaccinated annually. In an average year, between 120,000 and 400,000 Dallas-Fort Worth area residents will contract the disease. Whereas it is essential that those who are at high risk for developing complications from influenza get vaccinated annually. Whereas the American Lung Association of the Central States is dedicated to protecting our community from this potentially deadly disease. By educating Dallas-Fort Worth area residents about the importance of influenza immunization throughout the entire influenza season, and that's fall, winter, and spring, and whereas the Dallas City Council extends its sincere appreciation to the American Lung Association of the Central States for their commitment and dedication to the well-being of Dallas-Fort Worth. Whereas in recognition of the American Lung Association of the Central States, I encourage all the residents to take advantage of this month, and it is a significant time to learn about the importance of influenza vaccination. I wish all the success to the Faces of Influenza Month. Now, therefore, I, Pauline Medrano, representing Mayor Tom Leppert and of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby proclaim the month of October 2009 of Faces of Influenza Month in Dallas, Texas. Thank you so much. Thank you, Peggy, for being here. Would you like to say a few words?
Mr. Mayor and Council members, thank you so much for raising awareness about the importance of fighting the flu this year. It is such an easy thing to do to get your flu shot, and we have a nice way for everyone to go to. It's our facesofinfluenza.org website. You just click on the flu locator clinic button, and you can find a place to get your flu shot that's convenient and affordable for everyone. It's particularly important that we do this to protect our young children, working adults, people over 50, and people with chronic diseases who do suffer worse than others and result in death. So it's a very serious disease, and we so appreciate your help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. They are passing out little booklets and pamphlets to help each and every council member pass the word in their community. And all of us, I believe, have our stickers that says, I got my flu shot. So thank you so much. Thank you, Polly.
Ms. McDonald, thank you very much. I think before we begin, we've also got one special introduction. Ms. Margolin, can I turn to you, please?
We are very fortunate to have a celebrity with us this morning. His name is Gary Brown, and he was the producer of the television show Texas Walker, Texas Ranger. He also produced four seasons of Prison Break. So, Gary, why don't you come forward, and as I'm saying a few words about you, and then you'll have an opportunity to say a few words to us. He is now the co-executive producer of an upcoming television series that is being filmed in the Dallas area called Deep End, The Deep End, that will premiere in January or February. It is about an L.A. law firm, which shows you the versatility of Dallas since we can look like L.A., and it is about four young new lawyers from diverse backgrounds as they enter one of the most prestigious law firms in Los Angeles, Sterling Law. It's a 60-minute drama that will be weekly, and Gary is no stranger to Dallas, having been here for Walker, Texas Ranger, and he's also received the 2008 Topaz Award from Women in Film Dallas for his contributions to the Texas film community. And so we're thrilled to have you here. We're excited that you're doing this television show here, and we would love to hear from you.
Thank you. good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me this morning. I am here today because I wanted to take the opportunity to come before the City Council and the City of Dallas and simply thank everybody for the support, not only during the years of Walker, Texas Ranger, but for the 4 years of Prison Break, and now the new season of The Deep End. Shows like I just mentioned and Councilmember Margolin just mentioned are very difficult to do outside of Los Angeles unless you have the support of a city like Dallas. And the City of Dallas has been a tremendous support for those three television series that I've been a part of and what 20th Century Fox has been a part of over the course of the last two series. 20th Century Fox is going to continue to bring television series to this community because of the value of this community and the support of this city through the police department, the fire department, the permits office, the film commission office, the state film office. This is one of the most versatile cities and states that I've worked in throughout my career. And I just wanted to take the opportunity to put a face, my face, with the television productions that come to this city. Because a lot of times these film productions come into cities like Dallas. They produce their shows, whether it's a television series, a movie of the week, or a feature, and then they're gone. And a lot of people that work with the city who support that operation don't actually get to see the face of the people that actually do it because they're in and out so quickly. So I really wanted to come down here and thank you all in person for the support that you've given me so far and 20th Century Fox so far, and for the support that we know that you'll be giving us in the future. This is a tremendous opportunity for a continuous relationship, a hand-in-hand relationship with the City of Dallas and the film community, which I believe is such a valued relationship for both parties. So once again, I appreciate the support. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come down here and thank you in person, and I look forward to our future very successfully. Thank you very much.
And I would also like to recognize for a moment Kobe Russell, who organized this morning and who is a member of the Texas Commission for the Arts.
Gary, we appreciate very much. You've been a terrific client of the City of Dallas. As was mentioned, not only this most recent series, which we wish you the best of success on, but also Texas Ranger and then, of course, Prison Break. I don't know if everybody understands how important the film industry can be to the economic impact that it presents when it does a movie, a television series, or something else, but it has a big influence on it. It's also important to look at how we compete with other cities and other states. Clearly, there's been a big move away from California to the Michigans, to the Louisianas, to the New Mexicos. This last legislative session, our legislature put in place, I think, what will turn out to be a very competitive package of incentives that hopefully will allow more and more movies, series to be filmed, not only here in Dallas, but all the way through Texas. So it's an important part. Absolutely, please.
To go on that note, which is an extremely important note, not only for the state of Texas, but for the City of Dallas, I had the opportunity to testify twice in front of the State Senate Committee on the incentive program here. And fortunately, it did pass. And it is a huge economic impact for the community of Dallas, the state of Texas, and for the film industry. And there's a lot of very talented film community people that work here, and they should have the opportunity to continue to work here at home, as opposed to going to New Mexico or Louisiana, which has been two states in the surrounding areas that have had a terrific incentive to go shoot there. So you're exactly right. It's a huge economic impact on the state of Texas in a positive way and the City of Dallas, and I hope that we can continue that trend, and I hope that the passing of this incentive program, not only 20th Century Fox will come here to film, but more television networks and studios will feel that it is valuable to shoot here, because not only can you shoot Dallas for Dallas, but you can shoot Dallas for just about any major city in the United States. We didn't shoot Prison Break. When we shot Prison Break here, we never shot Dallas for Dallas. That's how versatile it is. We shot Dallas for every major city in the United States. And it was very successful, one of the most successful television series on television. And that trend can continue here. And the economic impact can be great.
No, that's exactly right. And the economic impact, not only in terms of the dollars that come in during production, but also the value and the visibility that we get, too.
Absolutely.
And that can be an important part of it, too. And, Gary, we very much appreciate you being a great fan and a great proponent of filming in Dallas. We very much appreciate that. And I know a couple of my colleagues would like to also make some comments. Mr. Atkins?
Oh, thank you, Mark. I think you said it just right, the economic impact to the City of Dallas. You know, I can go back in the early 1994, 1993, that I was had a great opportunity to help film the Texas Walking Rangers at Red Bear Airport, Mayor. So they have been here, and also the film. You know, the one thing we forget, we live in Texas. Texas is big. You know, California is a great state, but a whole lot of movie stars here in Texas. And I think that y'all coming to Dallas and looking at Dallas, and I think this is something that can drive economic development, especially downtown, throughout the whole city. I'm glad y'all do have us on your radar. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Appreciate it. Ms. Huffell, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Gary, just wanted to thank you again for coming down here and letting us know that you are in process now of filming the new series. I think you're going to find a great diversity in our city. We look forward to you helping us make more celebrities here. But certainly, you know, take a look at the southern sector. We've got some great opportunities there to film. We've got wonderful, wonderful resources, and just want to thank you and let you know that we are here to help you, and I extend my hand to you personally to help you with anything you need.
Thank you very much. I have a huge loyalty to this city. As long as I've been here, a huge loyalty to the film community that works here. And once again, we could not produce the television series that we produce here, the size that they are, primetime network shows, without the support of every one of you here in the city of Dallas. So thank you again.
Ms. McGraw, please.
Thank you very much. And Gary, thank you for coming down. And Ms. Russell, thank you very much for your support and opening your home the other day for the cast and for us to address them as well. But, you know, I've been reading up on all the characters. So I'm hoping that one day the law firm maybe can fly to Dallas and do maybe some shots of Dallas' skyline or something. I'm sure that there'll be an episode that they can come and visit Dallas.
I think that's a really good idea. You probably saw me up in the air the other day when we were shooting down on Commerce Street at the Jewel Hotel.
Yes.
So we are doing helicopter shots of the city, but it is Los Angeles now.
Sure,
but I too would hope that the storyline can bring us at least for an episode to this city.
Perhaps they can have a client in Dallas or something.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
I invite all of you or any of you to please come out and visit us while we're shooting.
This would be
thank you.
Not arm twisting. Gary, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Kobe.
Thank you very much for what you do, too, please. Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good morning. We continue on now with your morning speakers. Your first speaker will be Commissioner Ken Mayfield, followed by Ifyok A. Ekong. I will first please recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. Please address the Chair, Mayor Leppert. You may go ahead and proceed. Commissioner Mitchell, please state your name and address for the record.
Ken Mayfield, 1541 Terry N. Drive in Cedar Hill, Texas.
And Commissioner, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Mayor.
All of the interactions and the cooperation with the county.
Thank you. Mayor and Council, I'm here to just inform you and give you a little additional information and kind of get the word out about the new prescription drug benefit that Dallas County has entered into with Coast to Coast Prescription Card, which is a free prescription card for all of our residents in Dallas County. It doesn't cost the county anything. It doesn't cost the city anything. It doesn't cost our residents anything. It gives up to a benefit of 65% on any one particular drug. It gives a combined benefit, average benefit of about 30% on the drugs. We used to have the NACO card, which was through Caremark, and we discovered this company, and not only do we get prescription benefits here, but we also get a benefit, our residents get a benefit on imaging and lab work as well. And it's entirely free. You can go to our website to get a link to this website. This is the card. I dropped off 2,000 of these cards to your offices today, and we'd like to partner with the city to get these cards out to our residents for those that don't have insurance. But even if you do have insurance, this could be a benefit for you because this gives a benefit on 65,000 different prescriptions. Some of those prescriptions your insurance will not pay for, such as quality of life prescriptions that one may want to use. This will give a benefit on that. Your insurance will not. As well as the imaging and the lab work. We think it's a great benefit. We'd like you to put it in your libraries. I said, given you 2,000 cards. You can contact Coast to Coast directly, and you can tell them you want them delivered to a certain location within the city. They will deliver them to that location. They go out and market this. They've gone to all of the pharmacies. All of the pharmacies have these cards. You can print this out at home. You can go to their website. You can, if you've got a computer, you can go to the library. If you don't have a computer, use the printer. You can print out this card anywhere. You can use it as many times. It's for everybody. There's no income limitations on it. It's a great benefit for all of our residents, and I hope we can partner and get these cards out, especially to those that are uninsured who get the biggest benefit from it.
You mentioned uninsured, but for somebody that's got a high deductible or they're on an HSA, it's also beneficial, correct?
Absolutely. And for those senior citizens who hit that donut on Medicare, where they don't get those benefits after they've hit so much, this can then be used to supplement that.
And some of the material you give us also point out no expiration date, no paperwork, and even works for pet prescriptions.
Absolutely, absolutely. Works for pet prescriptions as well. Yes, yes. Great, great benefit.
Terrific. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I have one question. The card, did you leave them at the mayor's office, all 2,000, or are they going to each individual council member?
Well, I left 2,000 with the city secretary.
City secretary. Okay, then.
And we'll make sure those get distributed.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Hossel, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayfield, for coming down and letting us know. This sounds like a great program. My only question is, did we get the information in Spanish by any chance?
Absolutely. On each card on the back is Spanish. All of the website also has Spanish on it, so that's not a barrier.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Well, again, Commissioner, thanks for being with us. We appreciate the interaction. I know all of us have worked hard to make sure that we've got strong interactions between both the county and the city. Clearly, I think there's been some terrific cooperation just in the last couple of months on the transferring of some of the health programs, and we sure appreciate your effort and that of all the commissioners' court, plus everybody on the staff of the county.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Newman, did you want to add something?
Yes, Mayor, thank you. And I wanted to dovetail, thank you, Commissioner, for coming today. We very much appreciate Dallas County and Parkland Hospital partnering with the city in, as the mayor just mentioned, in our staff, infusing these health care needs for Dallas, the city of Dallas residents and citizens. And I want to, on the record, say thank you very much as a member of the Commissioner's Court. And I mentioned this to John Wiley Price the other day at the groundbreaking for, or the opening of the El Centro West Campus, the same thing again. We appreciate the positive attitude of the Dallas County Commissioner's Court in working with the city. And I can't say thank you enough because it's creating the safety net that we owe our citizens, and I appreciate it, and our citizens in my district appreciate it.
Absolutely. We're happy to do it. I'm getting a red blinking.
No, you're all right.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah, you're right. You're not red blinking. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
That's our red light camera.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you. Secretary.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Ifyok A. Econ, followed by Jay Robertson. If you'll please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Good morning, all. My name is Ifyok Agatha Econ. I live in 5405 Gaston Avenue, number 203, Dallas, Texas, 75214. Good morning, Mayor, and good morning, the City Council, and good morning, the community people. My name, as I stated, is Ifyok. I'm from Nigeria, the Niger Delta, the South, and the headquarters and of Upspring and Downspring of ExxonMobil in Nigeria. Couple of years ago, I came to United States to join my husband with the F2 visa, so I was opportune to be stay-at-home mom. So that brought me. I started learning the American system, and also I was opportunity to be assimilated by certain members of the community in Houston. So as I go around to the museums and to the school, I realized that our culture, the Nigerian culture, is particularly Ibibio and Efik from the Niger Delta is not being exposed. But as I go around to, I realized that I found some of the people that have been in Nigeria and also some of our people from the Irish and the Scottish that train us. So I asked them for them to give me the opportunity, the Houston area, to be the narrator of the African culture in the Children's Museum. So today I'm coming to talk about, I'm a member of the Dallas Coalition Women. I'm also, I'm a member of the AVIN International Women, and I contribute a lot to the Plano International Women Association. And also I was being opportunity to preview my project in the Dallas Cultural Arts Council. So I was being inducted into the Dallas Cultural Arts Council. So I do my presentation.
I just want to move you along a little bit because there's 3 minutes. I want to make sure you get to your point.
Okay. I move along with a project which is called Out of African Village. And in the village, we're going to be very, very brief. The most important thing, we teach the children the culture of our people, and we teach the children the games, we teach them the food, we teach them the textile, and we teach them the manufacturing and industrial, the manufacturing. Because, and also we take them to the forest through the anthropology and the archaeology, which we have one of the best museums in the world, the International Institute for Linguistics and Culture. Our main point that I came was that our budget has been cut. Our program, our division is called the Neighboring Touring Program. And this program have given the student and the community a very leeway because they cannot afford to go to the museum, and also we have what they call residency, which we teach them how to produce. Our goal is production. Our goal is not to depend on the government forever. Just like the Hispanic...
Why don't you take about 10 seconds and just summarize in class.
Just like the Hispanic came here in the 80s, you see the tamales in the stores or in the school meal. We want our culture and our textile and our work to be present. So we really want our funding to be reinstalled. And also we voted for the Proficient 8 and the bond, and no money came to us. So please help us.
Thank you, Ms. Kerwin.
Yes, and thank you for coming down. And let me just say I'm very interested myself, and I think Ms. Davis is going to have some comments in hearing a little bit more about your presentation. It's just not enough time for you today to... What I want to do is allow you an opportunity to visit with myself and maybe some other council members so that we can better understand where we're going and what you're trying to achieve, okay?
And I was the one that was architect to
find
the African...
Thank you. Let me go to Ms. Davis.
Okay.
Ms. Davis, please.
Ma'am?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm here. Thank you for... Right here. I'm over here. Thank you for coming down. As Ms. Caraway has said, we'll set up a meeting with you and to find out more about your what you're trying to do, and hopefully we can be an assistant to you or to help you, okay?
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you very much. Madam Secretary?
Thank you. Your next speaker is Jay Robertson, followed by Valentina Collins.
Good morning. My name is Jay Robertson. My mother's with me today, Judy Robertson. My dad, I just got him out of the hospital. This is pertaining. We've owned a club for 20 years, the Neighborhood Bar, Texas Star. Y'all heard from me about a couple months ago. Council member, I appreciate your help. Granted me a SUP license where I could permit smoking outside my building. It pertains to the no smoking. It is killing my business. I am, I think, the only one bar trying to obey by the law. I took my cigarette machine out in April. It has really hit us hard. There is a couple bars in the area, but one particular bar was granted a cigar bar license. I am losing all my business to them coming down and saying, hey, you can smoke down here. They got the same liquor, beer, wine sales. They got the pool tables. They got the everything that I have. And he's granted a cigar bar license. And we're the same size. I don't understand that. Not only that, he's adjacent to a federal-funded daycare. And it strictly says in the rule book, in the papers from the city, you're not supposed to be to a daycare or secondary prime care. And I don't understand this. And I'm losing my business because of this, because I'm trying to obey by the law. And I don't understand, and I've got to tell my people to sit out in the rain like it's killed me the last week or two. And I'm just asking, can I be granted a cigar bar license just like everybody else? It's almost like is it for revenue or is it for health reasons? I thought it was for health reasons. And it just seems like it's a revenue deal. It seems like if you sell 15% or more tobacco sales, it seems like we don't want to push that. We want to decline that. I'm 49 years old. I've never smoked. Don't want to. But some people, it's like hamburgers and fries. They have a beer, they want to smoke. And I'm trying to abide by the rule. All I want is an equal playing field. It's like saying one football team can wear helmets and one can't. It's just not a fair playing ground. And I'm losing my business to this guy 1 mile down the street that has the same liquor, beer, wine neighborhood bar like I am. And all I'm asking is a chance to play on the same field with a helmet. And I don't got that. And that's what I was asking.
I appreciate you. You actually raised two different questions. We'll make sure that we deal with both. One is, what do you need to do to get a cigar bar license, authorization, certification, that sort of thing? The second one is, you raised some questions in regard to somebody else that may or may not have one, so there's some facts that we need to check. I'm going to ask Forrest Turner. Forrest, if you would meet with Mr. Robertson off on the side and try to address both of those. In other words, the situation with Scar, but then also if we need to check out this other establishment to see if, to be truthful, they're playing by the rules. So I think we'll check on both of those.
That's all I'm asking.
So I know Mr. Cadain wants to make a comment, but after that, if you can meet with Forrest over on the side, I'd appreciate that. Mr. Cadain.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Also, thank you, Mr. Robertson, for coming down. Forrest, we really need to get with Mr. Robertson and try to find out where the problem is. And I think, Mayor, we need to have a briefing on the cigar bars, because I'm getting this time and again. There's people out there that they think they've been a cigar bar all along, but haven't been, and they're shutting them down. And there's folks like Mr. Robertson, which possibly could be a cigar bar and isn't. So I think at some point we need a briefing on this, because we've shut a lot of people down. Personally, I didn't think we should have, but I think this would be good to open it up so we are on an even playing field.
That's fair. It's a fair request. Let me ask if we can do this. Forrest, if you could get with the city attorney and get to all of us a couple of page memo that says just how this has evolved since it was passed. In other words, here's the requirements for the cigar bar. Here's the ones that have fallen in and qualified. Here's the other issues that have been raised. And distribute that to all of us. Then if that doesn't address the questions, then probably Ms. Medrano, I'll ask your committee or some other committee to raise it, do a briefing, and do an actual presentation and discussion. But why don't you get that to everybody just so that we've got the basic facts on the cigar bar, and then we'll go from there.
Could I say just one more thing? I would suggest, I'm not a brain scientist or nothing, but I would suggest, why not just a license once a year, like a dance floor license? I pay $1,500 a year for a dance floor license. Go ahead and say $1,000 a year for a smoking license, and you put on there, enter at your own risk, because the taxpayer and the city is sending all these people and having to patrol and keep people from smoking in these bars, and I guarantee you they're still smoking.
Okay, let me go to Mr. Salazar, please.
Mayor, I was just going to make the same request as Mr. Cadain. I think we just need an update on where we are, how it's evolved. I think one of the things that was a misconception on many people is that if they fell under a cigar bar, but I think when we wrote the legislation, I think we weren't very clear, and so I think we may need to clean it up just a little bit to make sure that operators that maybe should have fallen under the same category, we can help them. But certainly I'm open to look at the discussion, how the information comes out, and maybe have a discussion on the council if there's anything else we need to do on,
sure,
with respect to the ordinance.
No, absolutely. So let's go through it. And again, I think it's going to be important to check on this other establishment, because my anticipation is some people are calling themselves cigar bars and they're not falling into it, so it really becomes an enforcement issue. Ms. Carraway?
Thank you, Mayor. And let me just chime in to say that when this is reopened and revisited, and certainly I'm hoping to do what we need to do, but I'm going to make sure that at the top of the list that we're talking, when we're talking these cigars, I have some cigar shops, and Forrest, Mr. Turner, I have those cigar shops, those 24-hour tobacco cigar shops. with all types of paraphernalia that's being sold. And Joy, you know exactly what I'm speaking of. I want to make sure that when we begin to talk about it, and I'm going to talk about it, but this is included because we have some tobacco shops that are now opening up like hamburger stores all throughout our community, and they're operating 24 hours a day, and they are selling cigars. No, it has nothing to do with you and what we're talking about. But when we open it up, I want to have a full discussion so that we can figure out how we can bring closure to that little niche that's been plaguing our community, just as the car washes and everything else, okay?
Yes, sir. I know exactly
what we're talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
All right.
Tobacco paraphernalia, but it ain't the tobacco we're talking about.
Absolutely.
And I just want to equal playing field, because I'm dying. I'm dying here. And I wanted to just tell y'all, I appreciate y'all listening to me, and thank you, sir, again. You've always been on my side, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank y'all.
Secretary.
Your next speaker is Valentina Collins, followed by Albert Parker.
Hi, my name is Valentina Collins, and the address is 6207 Lakehurst Avenue, Dallas, Texas 75230. Good morning, and thank you so much for the time to speak about the important issue of billboards in our city. I was born and raised here in Dallas and plan on staying here, so I feel very strongly about the impact of billboards on the safety of our citizens and on the beauty of our city. First, I would like to thank the council for passing the No New Off-Premise Billboard Ordinance in 2000. This also prohibited billboards from becoming digitized, which is very important for safety and environmental reasons. But the reason I'm here today is because, unfortunately, the council has granted exceptions to the 2000 ordinance. You have allowed billboards in Deep Ellum, you have allowed super graphics on downtown buildings, allowed some digital billboards, and allowed, in 2008, voted to allow wall wraps on 12 downtown buildings. You have responded to the pressures of developers and landowners. These special interests sold this as revitalization of Deep Ellum and downtown areas, but nothing could be further from the truth. These billboards do the opposite of revitalization. They erode the area and detract from its beauty and history. Nobody wants to see this visual pollution other than the people who profit from it. Recently, the Transportation Secretary convened a safety summit in Washington, D.C. regarding driving distractions. The presenters discussed that every study since 1995 shows that there's an adverse relationship between distraction and digital billboards. Billboards, especially digital billboards that are changing constantly, are driving distractions, just like talking on a cell phone or texting while someone's driving. Let's remember that billboards are designed to make you look. Otherwise, they defeat the purpose of advertising. Not only are they a safety hazard, they're also harmful to the environment. The carbon footprint of one digital billboard is the equivalent of 13.39 homes or 49 traditional billboards. I urge you to stand firm with the 2000 ordinance. No new billboards is good public policy. Chipping away at the good intentions and clear policy of the ordinance is detrimental to Dallas. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Mayor. And let me just say that I was a part of that fight in 2000, but I'm only going to address the digital, and I somewhat disagree as related to the digital. I've seen the digital, and I want to just put my position out up front. I really like what I see as it relates to the digital. I want to pay close attention to what your concerns are, and let's see if we agree to disagree and how the concerns that you've expressed this morning, we can best try to follow along. But I think it's fair for me to say to you that I simply love these digitals. They're not as bright, and I know that they change. I don't agree with the fact that they are a distraction. I think, though, if we take a negative or a bad situation and we work it through to minimize it, if it's going to happen, let's try to at least control and minimize it as best possible. but I want you to know, one, where my position is.
Right.
And then, two, let's see if we can see how we can address some of the concerns that you're having, and see how it could best work in the end for everybody. But I'm just in love with what I've been seeing on I-30 and some of those places, but it could be that some are different, and I've not seen some of those that you're speaking of, but I'd love to have that direction and
right.
that conversation.
Mr. Talley, our pleasure. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for coming today. Actually, I was here and voted on when we, outlawed the new billboards, and especially from highways. I think you brought an issue that I think we really hadn't looked at, and I think that's the carbon imprint of the billboards. Digital is very nice, but I think the issue becomes that do we have a policy to encourage recyclables used in the restorations or reconstruction of these billboards that already exist? If they're going to leave an imprint or a carbon imprint, how can we dilute or diminish that imprint? They're going to use electricity or some kind of power source. Are there times that they can use solar, for example? I think that's an issue that we haven't looked at, that certainly we could investigate. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. I think we're moving forward on allowing some issuance of opportunity for billboards, even in the downtown area, but I think that's an issue that we need to look at. While we're saying we're a green city, we should mean that we're green in all different aspects. So
right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Madam Secretary?
Your next speaker is Albert Parker, followed by Roberto Alonso, Jr.
He's not here.
Albert Parker, 6318 Elam Road. My subject is the blame game at City Hall. Each of you, to the presiding officer, Mayor Leppert, and to the entire council members, each of you have a copy of a document that is recorded in the Dallas City Secretary's office. I represent John Q. Public. Each of the Dallas City Hall documents pertaining to the Walker Decree issue. This document was part of the federal court corruption case. I now will read page one of the highlights. City of Dallas Housing Finance Corporation, minutes of board meeting, March 18, 2005. On page 2, agenda item number 6 reads as follows. Discussion and possible approval to amend the multifamily application to delete the Walker unit requirements subject to Dallas City Council approval. Carolyn Schaefer explained to the board that the city would be released from the Walker consent decree in August of 2005. In order for the DHFC to be on an equal playing field with the TDHCA, it would be necessary for the DHFC to delete the Walker unit requirement contained in the DFLC multifamily application. During the federal court proceeding, former Mayor Laura Miller, under oath, testified certain data was not given to the full council regarding the Brian for taxes deal on the two projects, Laura Land and Stein Project. Third party participation deal with Dallas Housing Authority until after the council voted on October 23rd, 2004. 10 days before the city council voted on October 23rd, the Housing Finance Corporation board met to approve $50 million municipal bonds for Laura Land and for Stein. The board was told that Brian Patassa Southwest Housing had brought on a new partner in Dallas Housing Authority, and that it would be sold to the Dallas Housing Authority. Thereby, he wouldn't have to be paying the taxes on the properties. This is disturbing that Mayor Miller knew about. It was disturbing to that council member in October 24th when they made the approval to award the contract of $50 million for Cyan and $50 million for Laurel Land Project, which meant that Brian Patassi would not have to pay any property tax. That's disturbing. And she was asked on the stand, what did you think about that? She said, I hope some of this will go away. Wouldn't you file a complaint? She said, no. I'm saying...
Thank you very much. We appreciate you being with us. Our first item of business, then, is the minutes of...
September 23rd, 2000.
September 23rd. Those have been distributed, moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. On the consent agenda this morning, there's a number of items that have been requested to be considered individually by various members of the council. Let me go through those with you.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor. If you'll excuse the interruption, Council Member Salazar made me aware that Mr. Alonzo is here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see him come in. Please.
That is Roberto Alonzo, Jr. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
My name is Roberto, Jr. Alonzo. I live at 529 Hoel Drive, and I didn't know that I had to sign in. But I apologize, and thank you very much, City Council, Mr. Mayor, for letting me be here. And I was going to speak about community service, but I looked it up, and because community service has a negative connotation, so I'm going to speak about good works. And on good works, every day after work, I would spend about 2 hours on Beckley between Pembroke and Yarmouth. And I would clean the street there, with the curb, between the curb and the fence. And I would keep cleaning up the trash, and neighbors would come by, why are you cleaning up the trash? Well, because I don't want my city to look bad. And after I finished cleaning up the city, or that little street, I called the city and I asked them to come clean to come cut. The grass and the trees that were there, and I called them and I said, all right, we'll go by in 39 days. And so I finished cleaning it up, and I called back to tell them that the trash was picked up. So, and they're like, what? Oh, we just thought you wanted an inspection. No, ma'am. I would like for the city to cut the grass. And so now I just want to promote the city of Dallas being green, and that's all I got.
We appreciate it. Thanks for being with us. Thank you. As I mentioned, on the consent agenda, there's a number of items that will be considered individually. Let me run through those with you. Item number 2, Mr. Newman has requested that be considered individually. Item number 12, Mr. Newman and Ms. Margolin. Item number 16, Ms. Margolin. Item number 19, Mr. Newman. Item number 30, Mr. Atkins. And then over on the addendum, item number 1 by Mr. Newman and item number 7 by Ms. Hunt. So the ones that we'll consider individually then will be number 2, number 12, number 16, number 19, number 30, number 34, and then over on the addendum, 1 and 7.
Mayor, I have a conflict of interest that I disclosed to the city secretary on number 47.
Got it. That'll be on the individual items anyway.
Okay.
That's below the line. With that, can I have a motion for approval of the consent agenda and the addendum? It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, can we go to item number 12 first, please?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number 12 is authorize an economic development grant agreement with Deloitte LLP and or its subsidiaries related to the retaining and expanding of the company's operation expansion in downtown Dallas. We do have one speaker on the item, Michael King. Mr. King, you will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. I don't have a problem with this item. I do agree with the retention of trying to keep corporate offices downtown. However, I'd like to make an amendment with the Council to take into consideration, and I'm sure the organization will won't mind as well, that we, since we invested in $2 million from the citizens' dollar, that they would kind of get back as far as hiring some of our high school students during the summer, either two or three from each high school, and give them a chance to see what life's working in CPA firm, somewhere to get back, kind of invest in our young people, 11 or 12 graders, that they would get a chance to explore the opportunity of working in a CPA firm, the county, all the different careers that are associated with a CPA firm. And I hope we can tell, I'd like to see the county take that under consideration during the negotiations of the contract. I know they're making $19 million investment in the building, which is their improvements. But also see this come back to the school that we hire, that they will hire during the summers. Some of the high school kids, either two or three from each high school in the DISD, and the diversity, and give them a chance, this opportunity to get explore some careers in the CPA firm. And also, as we do public-private partnership, that we'll try to encourage to bring corporate or white-collar jobs to Oak Cliff. We have different areas in Oak Cliff, Zane Boulevard, Red Bird Airport area. We got some opportunities on Lancaster Court and South Dallas that we tried to look at bringing these corporate relocations or white-collar jobs to the southern sector. So if the council can take that into consideration, they can amend that to encourage them to employ these summer, the kids during the summer, kind of get return back on our investment, back in the investment of the young people. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Margolin, please.
When I first saw this on the Economic Development Committee agenda, I was very skeptical and very concerned about it. I've spent some time with the economic development folks, particularly Hammond Perot, looking at the economic model that shows what the city stands to gain because of moving 470 employees from Irving to Dallas. If this were simply the company staying here, that would be one thing. But this is the bringing in of almost 500 employees, plus huge finish out, and the likelihood that many of the new employees, as they come on to this company, will live downtown. The economic model is very conservative, and it shows that over 10 years, these additional employees should bring about $8 million in taxes to the city in the form of a variety of ad valorem sales taxes, personal business taxes, etc. And so while I am concerned about the precedent that it sets, I am going to support it because over the 10-year period, the city will recoup significantly more than it's going to expend.
Thank you. Mr. Tiffany, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is, I think, another good example of how we're continuing to move the city ahead. First thing I'd like to do, we've got some people out in the audience, John Crawford with Downtown Dallas. We've got Blaine Nelson, the managing partner with Deloitte, and sitting in front of them is Clayton Elliott with Hines representing Chase Tower. They're the owners of the building. This is the type of thing that we need to go out and do to continue to grow the economy of the city of Dallas. Not only are we retaining a good corporate citizen, we're growing the base that a good corporate citizen is bringing to the city, and with no disrespect to Irving, we're moving some jobs from Irving to downtown Dallas where we need them. Preliminarily, our investment in this will return about a 15-to-1 return to the city of Dallas over the course of the years that they're going to be here. And hopefully they'll be here beyond their 10-year lease, because please don't renew that. I mean, don't not renew that lease without coming to talk to us, okay? Come on, Blaine, laugh a little bit about that. Okay. So we just need to keep moving forward. I think staff put a lot of work into it. We've done our homework. This is a good financial deal for the city. It did receive unanimous recommendation from the Economic Development Committee, and so I would certainly hope it is part of the consent agenda, but I would certainly hope all my colleagues support it strongly. Thank you.
I'll take that as a motion.
Second.
Motion for approval, yes.
Second.
Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Margolin made some pointed comments, that, and I want to make sure it's very clear on the record. And I don't know if I asked Carl this or Hammond this or AC this, someone from staff needs it. I want to make sure that on the record we're very clear that each one of these economic development type incentives do not create a precedent for a future item. I think that this is a question I brought up at the Economic Development Committee, and again, I want to say to full council today. That was the question. I'm sorry.
That's correct, Mr. Newman.
So that each is independent, separate from other transactions, doesn't encumber the city in any other deals that come.
That is correct.
Okay, good. I'm on the face value, very supportive of this. It's an investment under downtown. But I want to make sure that we as the council, professional staff, and the business community that is investing in our downtown understands that it's a case-by-case basis and that sort of thing. One other question, and that is, how do we monitor this to see that indeed they, as a good corporate citizen, are going to do what they say that they're going to do as we provide this tax abatement?
Well, each year we'll look at the jobs on site. When they move into their space, we'll look and go look at the AIA reports on expenditures for the building. We'll monitor the tax rolls. So we do an annual compliance during a period of the contract.
And is that a new system that you're putting in place, or is that an existing system that is working?
It's an existing system that's been working since around 98 to 2000.
And we haven't had any unreasonable glitches in that monitoring system's working?
No, sir. We put that monitoring system in place around 98-2000 to make up for some issues that were present prior to that, so we've corrected.
Okay. I just want to make sure the manager's assuring us that the monitoring system is in place, and so I appreciate that, Hammond, very much. There was a significant discussion amongst this council as it relates to the whole pilot program out of the Dallas Water Utilities that funds the public-private partnership. This is one of the byproducts of that. I voted in favor of that, and I'm still supportive of that concept. I just think we have to be very careful along the way. I'm guessing we're going to get more requests along this line, not less, and so we're going to have to be careful what we do with the limited funds that we have. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kelly, please.
Thank you, Mayor, and I did sit on that Economic Development Committee, and we did pass it through, and I was very pleased to do so. I just want to take this short moment and opportunity to make sure that you all know that eating lunch downtown is something that's just great. But I want to invite you here to City Hall to our seventh floor, to Nathan's upstairs for lunch. So that make sure that you let your folks know that the seventh floor has an outstanding lunch and breakfast here in City Hall.
Mr. Allen.
Councilman Carraway, that's a good lead-in. This is truly an economic benefit to the city of Dallas. You talked something along the lines just about lunches and maybe even parking. If you take $7.50 a day that each one of these 1,400 people are going to spend, and you multiply $7.50 times 1,400 times 252 business days, it's a little over $2.6 million. Every year is going to change hands. It's going to change hands. But really my point in speaking is just to thank y'all. Thank y'all for your commitment to Dallas, staying down here in this great city, because we are premier city. And your commitment to stay here, keep your folks down here, and your commitment, too, of all the other just good things y'all do with your donations, the help, the summer programs that you bring already into place with, the kids helping things out. It's huge for us. It's huge for us. It's huge for our citizens. And it's the quality of life that you guys help. We appreciate you, and just look forward to a long and good, solid relationship. So thank you. We understand that commitment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. And I would like to echo the comments that have been made. Deloitte has been a good partner in a number of different ways, but more importantly, this is a good economic deal for the city of Dallas. As was pointed out by Ms. Margolin, while the retention is important, it brings 450 new jobs to downtown. To give you a feel, say if AT&T and Tenet, that's probably the biggest new addition that we've had in the last year and a half or 2 years. So it's a significant new, quote-unquote, new company coming into the city of Dallas. So we are appreciative of the investment. We're appreciative of the confidence that's being placed in the city of Dallas by Deloitte. I'd also point out they're also making another major investment in the region, and that's a new training center that will bring people from all over the world to this. So again, be it the city of Dallas or be it the region, Deloitte's an important player, and we appreciate the confidence it's shown. I would also point out, and something that we don't always see, but it was raised by Mr. Newman, and there are a lot of requests that come in that are just turned down, that simply don't get to the council because we're not voting on a negative. But there's a lot of different requests that comes from a lot of different employers, and I happened to see one yesterday where the answer was no because it simply didn't meet the economic hurdles. It didn't produce a return for the city of Dallas, so there was no reason to do it. But this is an important one. And with that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Thank you very much. Look forward to having you for a long time. Thanks, Mike. Madam Secretary, let's go to item number two.
Item number two is authorize the purchase of a high-density mobile storage system for police property unit, Southwest Solutions Group, Inc., through the Texas Multiple Award Schedule. Councilmember Newman pulled the item.
Mr. Newman, please.
Mr. Cook. Mayor, I have no qualms with the actual item that we're talking about today. My question goes more to the financing side of it. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
In the write-up, it says that we're financing this $449,000 with 2007 equipment acquisition contractual obligations. What's the term of those?
They were five-year equipment notes.
Five-year equipment
five
notes.
5 years.
Okay. And what's left in the 2007? What's left in the 2007 pool of funds to draw from?
About 5% of what we issued that year.
What is that in dollars?
A little over $1 million.
$1 million. So the manager and the council still has $1 million left to fund through that 2007 program, yes?
Yes, and for things that are identified that were originally anticipated, but we never intended things to go this long.
That's precisely why I'm asking the question.
No, that's exactly right. We certainly expected to have these items, the shelving system, under contract within a year of the issuance of the notes, and with some delays, some vendor issues pulled out, new bids, that caused the delay to get to this point.
Okay. All right, I'm fine. I just wanted, Mayor, to see what the balance was left there. I move approval.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, I think 16 is our next one.
Thank you, Dave.
Item number 16 is authorize the supplemental agreement number 4 to the development agreement among the City of Dallas, the Downtown Dallas Development Authority, and FC Merck Complex LP, FC Continental Complex LP, FC Atlas Inc., and FC Lessee. 2, number 1, increase the required minimum continental building improvements for residential units from 140 to 160 units to 180 units, and decrease retail square footage from 9,000 square feet to 5,000 square feet. Number 2, adjust the number of parking spaces from 350 to 250 to correct a typographical error. Number 3, extend the completion date for the redevelopment of the Continental Building from June 30, 2011 to December 31, 2011. Number 4, add an affordable housing requirement that 20% of the total number of residential units must be set aside as affordable. And number 5, establish downtown connection TIP district funding for project costs related to the redevelopment of the Continental Building in an amount not to exceed $17,528,288. Councilmember Margolin pulled the item.
Ms. Margolin, please.
Yeah. I've spent quite a few hours over the last week studying this agenda item from two vantage points. First, does it make sense as a deal? And second, will this project, along with the Merck, the park, the upcoming Atmos proposal, UNT Law School, do what we all want it to do, and that is revitalize this area? And the first question, does it make sense as a deal? It probably does, because we being the city, the staff, has spent a lot of time pieced together the financing for this, and it can work as a deal. But is it at the right price? And I guess what I want to put out here is that between this deal and the upcoming Atmos deal, we're going to be using another $40 million of TIF money. We still have the grand to go, and probably, what is it, 901 Pacific? I may have the address wrong. I do not see how we are moving to the point where this area will be a stimulus for private investment. It is lining up to remain an area that can only work with significant subsidies from the city. We're also using up a lot of our, I guess it's 9 and 7, about $16 million of our 108 money on this, when I believe that that could be used much more effectively for affordable housing in other parts of the city. So in the end, on this project, we're going to be spending about $57 million as the total cost of the project to create 180 new units. That's $300,000 per apartment unit. This clearly cannot work as a market project, and I understand that it is far more expensive to do this kind of construction when you're dealing with old buildings and historic buildings. I guess my question is, in the end, are we going to have a number of buildings in one place that are all subsidized? All future development in this area has to be subsidized, and we will have spent $100 to $150 million from the TIF to make this all possible. Is this the best way to spend the TIF money? And that's really my question. I'm not here to answer that question today, but I'm saying that before we proceed further, we really need to step back and look at this and say, is this the best way to stimulate this area? Is this the way to make this a catalyst for the development that we want? I'm not convinced that it is. And so if I could do what I would like to do, I would like to ask the TIF to spend some money on a study to determine what is the best way to invigorate this area. What is the best way to use the TIF money? It could be that some of this money should go to the streetcars that we're looking so seriously at. It may be more infrastructure. It may be to fund retail. But in the end, right now, we are on a course that is going to use up all the TIF money pretty quickly. And I'm not sure that that's the best thing to do for this area. And so I am not going to support this, because I would like to step back and reevaluate everything that we're doing in that part of the city.
Thank you. Ms. Salazar?
Thank you, Mayor. This item has been before the economic development and also housing with respect to the housing component. I think looking at this project, I look at it in much the same way. Back in 1991, when we created the City Place TIF, the only thing that existed out there was really nothing. And when you look at 50 today and development that's come along, and the TIF has evolved into the money being used for residential units, and that has spurred, I believe, in Uptown, the great revitalization that you see today on McKinney Avenue. It started from one point, and it just kind of spread. I think when you look at downtown, in many ways, it's similar in one way, but in other ways, it's not. When we developed Uptown, we didn't have the issues of moving to the side, 30, 40-story buildings, because that is a prohibitive cost in any context you look at it as far as development of an area. But what we chose to do in the downtown is to redevelop those same facilities to provide for residential units that we need downtown to provide the density that will lead to sales, that will lead to more development. So in that respect, I think in one way that we do have to utilize our TIF money today to make sure that we are going to have a tomorrow. If we stopped at City Place and didn't move beyond Fitzhugh and 75, and we didn't move beyond Hall Street to McKinney, it's very clear we wouldn't have gotten as far over to Harry Hines where we have gone today and even beyond now, looking at victory. But it just takes the commitment of the city to help provide the density, I believe. And this is one way to do it. It's not the only way to do it. And I agree with Ms. Margolin that TIF funds can be used for these other purposes, and I fully respect her position on that. My position today is only that this is one way we need to move forward with it, and we are going to have to address the grand when it comes to that point, but we're not there yet. So while today we are approving this, we have to keep in mind that we're going to have to look for other funding sources to make these other projects happen. With that, Mayor, I will move approval on this item.
Moved and seconded. Ms. Hunt, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I think Ms. Margolin's points are very well taken, and I think they go to the fundamental question of the purpose of our downtown TIF and our plan going forward with our downtown TIF. But if you look at this particular area, we've invested a great deal of city increment in our Mercantile project.
That's correct.
In our Main Street Garden, we're partnering with the law school to bring that downtown, to bring students and life into this area. We've invested a great deal in our Main Street retail. And one thing that we continue to lack in downtown, and any developer you talk with, any person who has an outside perspective from different cities will tell you, you need more people living in downtown Dallas. And when I analyzed this project, the questions I asked you were particularly about the relationship between the Continental Building deal and the Mercantile deal. And I asked, would the Mercantile deal stand on its own?
Yes, you did. And the answer to that is that the Mercantile deal could have been done on its own. It would have required the same subsidy. In other words, there wasn't any real physical connection there. It had a value with a good tailwind of maybe about $60 million, and it had a cost at that time of about $120 million. So we had to come up with the subsidy, the gap, up front. And that would have happened regardless of any other building in the downtown.
And would the Mercantile, let's imagine that the city had not invested any TIF increment in the Mercantile project. Do you see the Mercantile building being renovated under any other circumstances without city assistance?
There's no way that could have been done without city help or some type of public help. It just didn't make any sense on its own.
And I think colleagues, that's the challenge we face in downtown Dallas. We have a number of vacant buildings that can either sit idle and not contribute to our tax base, or we can work as a partner with the increment. I think that's very important that we focus on the fact that we're not talking about general fund revenue. We're talking about increment that is an increased amount of funds and taxes that would not be available were it not for these improvements to these buildings, correct?
That's correct, Ms. Hunt. And I mean, in this particular case, we structured what in effect was an increment sharing from the properties on the north side of Woodall Rogers for the downtown. In other words, we recognized that all of these buildings in the downtown core would not stand on their own. And so the property owners on the northern side of Woodall Rogers agreed by petition to be part of this TIF, and the trade-off there was the deck park.
And they wanted the deck park, but I think the larger interest is in making sure we have a healthy, vital downtown.
Yes.
And to do that, we're going to have to be a partner in a number of projects in downtown.
For the foreseeable future.
For the foreseeable future. But to be clear, I think it's just so important to be clear what that means, that we're not taking money out of the general fund and handing it over to the developer, that we are reinvesting additional tax funds that would not exist were it not for new development.
That's correct. That's the whole idea of the tax increment finance district, to channel investment to a particular geographic area, as in this case is downtown.
And I think the affordable housing, I'm very pleased that we have 20% affordable housing in this project, because again, if we cater only to one socioeconomic strata in downtown, we're not going to have a lively, sustainable downtown. We have got to make it available for people who have all levels of income. And that's why the affordable housing component is important in this, and also the Atmos project.
That's right.
Having both of those. So I do take Ms. Margolin's points very seriously, and those are some of the same issues I brought up before as we discussed the downtown TIF and this particular project. But I also am a realist, and when I look at downtown, and I know that if the heart of our city is not healthy, all of our city loses out. And if we're going to create a vital downtown, we've got to have people living down there. And to do that, we've got to be in partnership on some of these private developments. So I do support this. I think this, from a financial standpoint, makes sense. Philosophically, it makes sense in creating, I think, a synergy in this particular area that will help us create a more vital downtown in this particular area, hopefully with fewer subsidies in the future. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Natinsky.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. While you're there, Mr. Zabakovsky, when does the downtown TIF terminate? 2012?
I think it has another 25 years or so.
Another what?
I believe it has another 25 years or so.
Which TIF expires in like 12?
That is the city center TIF.
Oh, the
city center,
center
TIF expires in 2000.
Okay. The purpose of us using the TIF tool is to take vacant downtown buildings and get them occupied, have people living in them, have people in activity downtown to so-called light up the buildings. And without that help, there is no way that we're going to be able to do it, especially in today's economic situation. We have had a good trend of successes. We've got Jim Truitt sitting up there with Forest City. David Levy's been down here more times than you, Carl, probably, trying to get that project moving forward. Yes, we have incentivized the developer with a lot of TIF money to make it happen, a lot of city help to make it happen. But without it, we would have dust blowing in the streets of downtown. And I'm not against what Ms. Margolin is suggesting, that we continue to need to tweak our tools and our processes, but I think we've got a good, well-established process in place to vet the projects and make sure that they are appropriately financed, that they're appropriately arranged, that they're in fact, Carl, don't we look through and make sure that the rate of return that the developer is getting is not something out of the range of normal, and in most cases their rate of return is below what someone would get in a normal market condition.
In all of the cases that relate to the redevelopment of downtown buildings, that's the case.
Right. So, you know, there is nobody laughing all the way to the bank with bucket loads of money because the city is allowing them to redevelop vacant downtown buildings with TIF funds or other city help. I think we ought to give the individual developers in every one of these cases a round of applause. I'm not asking to do that now, for taking the risk of taking their hard-earned capital and moving it into downtown Dallas and helping us get downtown to what it needs to be. We need affordable housing and working-class housing downtown. The more jobs we bring downtown, the more people, if we're going to build up the density, need to work downtown, need to live downtown, and as Mr. Allen says, need to spend their money downtown eating lunch and dinner. That's what this is all about. We've got the law school right across the park there. There's probably, you know, 600,000 to 700,000 students that are going to be eating and being active downtown. They're going to need a place to live. I don't know that they're going to come all the way up into far north Dallas, my part of town, and rent an apartment and then commute downtown. My guess is they're going to want to live downtown. This is the type of deal that we need to have in our city. Ms. Margolin brings up a good point. As each one of these particular projects come forward, we dip into our TIF funds and our other resources, be they grant money or whatever, and we don't have a whole lot left. So we have to carefully look at each project and determine, is this the one we want to spend our last remaining dollars on? But we do have, with the advent of a couple of weeks ago, the City of Dallas Regional Center, we now have another tool in the toolbox. And my hope is, and I think we will get there, is that we will be able to utilize that tool, which is outside investment dollars, to help jumpstart many of these projects and fill the gap that, under the current situation, the only way to fill the gap was to have city money or TIF money do it. So we're continuing to tweak our selection of tools. I'm not saying that any of these projects down the road will not need city help. I think some will still continue to need city help. But if we can fill most of that gap with outside investor money versus either TIF money or city funds, then we begin to turn the corner of sort of weaning downtown development away from City Hall help. In the end, we will reach a point at which I'm convinced we will not be sitting around this horseshoe offering any city help downtown, because the mass and the synergy and the excitement that's going on downtown will have reached a point that the market will begin to take over. And that's what we're all striving to do. So I'll certainly be supporting this. It was recommended for approval by the Economic Development Committee. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Carl, I have a couple questions. Have we looked at all our funding, perhaps what other cities are doing around the country besides the TIF? Is there other money out there to help with new development?
I think that that all cities are looking to leverage a variety of sources. I mean, in this particular situation, we have also looked at a Section 108 housing grant.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, we're combining that with the TIF reimbursement, and the TIF reimbursement will provide the funds to repay the 108 loan. So most cities are, you have, in these types of situations, you have sort of a layered financing, and they're using a variety of different sources. Mr. Natinsky mentioned the regional center.
I just think we need to start thinking outside of the box. I was looking at the news last night. This guy, he's 27 and a millionaire. He thought outside the box. He's buying historical units. He's turning them into loft and retail. And he is just really, I just would like to see us think outside of the box on new funding, even if we go to HUD or somewhere, and talk about new things that can bring us more money to do new projects.
Ms. Davis, for the next couple of years, we're going to have to live outside of the box.
Okay. And what would that be?
We'll have to use a variety of tools, both in Southern Dallas and in the downtown, to make these projects economically feasible.
Okay. Can you give me a list of developers? Do we keep a list of developers?
I can provide you with a list of developers, sir.
Okay, I'd like to have a list of developers. And the other thing is, when we talk about the southern sector on mixed retail, do we find a lot of developers who want to come into the southern sector and to do the type of mixed retail development for money, such as the TIF or other?
I think there are a limited number of developers, and right now, there aren't many developers that want to do retail anywhere because of the existing economic conditions. Mm-hmm. But what we need to do with developers who have an interest is provide them with the economic incentives that will level the playing field.
And that's what we're trying to work on now.
That's correct.
Okay, thank
you. Let's finish round one, Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Mayor. Carl. Well, first I want to make a comment on another colleague's comment, which is very appropriate, in my opinion. Mr. Natinsky spoke about the need to help out business development in the downtown area, and I absolutely agree and I'm supportive of that, but I also think it always has to be with economic viability. So hopefully for a city, did their due diligence, and others that come along that get TIF funds are doing this on the basis of economic viability. Because you're right, Mr. Natinsky, in the end, the city needs to back away from this, and the marketplace needs to let capital flow where it gets a return. We had a council committee meeting the other day, and we were talking about changing some zoning in an area and putting some requirements in place. And my comment was the marketplace where private enterprise invests their capital needs to be the guide, because usually that's the best way. So I'm supportive of our city being involved in this project on an ongoing basis, but the marketplace needs to eventually be allowed to be the judge of this as opposed to the government. Question. It mentions in here, add an affordable housing requirement. This was not in the original deal?
No, it was
really?
Not. It was not.
I thought all TIF requirements now had a 20% requirement.
That particular deal, that was waived, and it was waived by the county, and it was specifically waived for
wow.
for Atmos.
Why was it waived?
It was part of trying to make the numbers work. The numbers were so out of skew, so out of whack.
This is at the origination of this.
At the origination of this deal back in 2004, 2005.
Yes, sir.
That when it was negotiated, that it was specifically excluded. It would have required an even larger subsidy. But on all subsequent deals, there is a 10% requirement downtown. That's the minimum requirement, and in all the other TIFs, it's 20%.
If the minimum downtown is 10%, why is this deal being pitched at 20%?
Because it's a function of utilizing Section 108 program money.
Okay. 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 All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin.
I want to be clear that this is not about this deal. It's not about believing that the developer is getting too sweet a deal. I think it's a very fair deal, given what it is. I question a couple of things. First, $57 million is being spent to create a building that's going to go on the tax roll somewhere probably in the neighborhood of about $25 million. While the TIF is going to be paying for this, we have to be aware that much of the TIF that is paying for this is in Uptown. And so the increment from these buildings are not what's really going to pay this back. It's because we've included a lot more in this TIF that it makes it possible. And I come back to the fundamental question, not whether we should have this TIF. This is done. It's fine. Is this the best way to spend the next $50 to $75 million of this TIF money? That's my question, and that's my concern, and that's my doubt, and that's what I would like to step back and examine.
Appreciate it. We've got to move in a second. I would just add a couple of things. I think all of us, and I hope this is universal, would rather the private sector get in and put an investment into this area of town or any other town. I think clearly we're dealing with some challenges of some areas that weren't addressed long ago, and we're trying to kickstart those. As Ms. Hunt pointed out, this is on the increment, so it's not taking new dollars. We're trying to take incremental dollars that are created by adding value in areas that we've designated as the TIFs. I'm supportive of this because, again, I think it's an area that we want to see some good things happen. We've got the potential. I think the staff has gone through, and then the right analysis both on this deal but also the impact on the area and our ability to generate a return for the taxpayers. With that said, I think Ms. Margolin raises a good point, and I think it's something that, Carl, to you and to the others, I think it's a fair question, and I'd like you to come back in writing to all of us and say, okay, in this area, I think we're talking specifically in this area, where do we go next? In other words, given the dollars in the TIF, what's available, where do we want to do it? And I'm not saying this building is worth X and that sort of thing. It's clearly got to be broader than that because each one of these you're going to go in and negotiate the best deal that you can for the city. So I don't want to limit your ability on that. But I think it's fair, since we'll have another one that's going to come up in another 2 months plus that we're going to look at, to at least step back and say, okay, given the dollars in the TIF, here's at least how we look at spending them, or how we would recommend spending them, so it's going to be the TIF that's going to do it, and give us a little bit of perspective, a broader perspective, on where we want to go with this.
how much will be available, where we think, and again, from a policy standpoint, where have you spent, and where we're going to get the biggest bang for the buck on. Because I think we want to be careful that we don't spend all the money on the front end and then all of a sudden think, my gosh, there's something down the line that we wish we would have had some money for that would have been a better return for the taxpayers than this. I think it's also important there to reinforce, kind of from a policy standpoint, how we expect to get our money back out of doing these sorts of things. But I think that perspective in this area, taking a broader one, and just reinforcing the process is going to be helpful to all of us.
Mr. Mayor, I would remind everyone also that we are in the midst of a downtown area plan that I think will also be able to help us with larger context and in setting priorities.
Absolutely, and the 360, I think the other day was a good example. Just build all of those pieces into it. So again, we've got some perspective in answer to the question. I realize it's not specific, but kind of here's where we're going. So we're not just looking at a point, but we're trying to look at where we're going and get some context as we look at each one of these. And appreciate it, Nat. I hope that will be helpful on the question that was raised. With that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. We'll note the objection. Ms. Margolin, please. Item number 19, please.
Item number 19 is authorize an economic development loan to TC Grocery, Inc. in an amount not to exceed $105,000 for exterior and interior building improvements to 5050 Bexar Street. Councilmember Newman pulls the item.
Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't know if AC or who would from staff would be available for this. Or is it Jerry? Or is it... That looks like it's Jerry. Good morning, Mr. Killingsworth. How are you? Help me on this, please. This is a economic development loan, but it's based on a five-year forgiveness schedule?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What's the criteria by which staff is proposing the council adopt this forgiveness? What's the criteria by which this particular company gets their loan forgiven?
They get it forgiven. We will do inspections, and as long as the MyTran group keeps the store open, operating in a satisfactory manner, pays their taxes, do not get have any issues with the police department, code compliance. Those are the basic ones that will be built into the contract.
And is this a couple of items before I asked Hammond about whether we have a monitoring system in place for economic development deals? The same question I would have here: is this a new system in place to monitor this? Or is this something that's already in place for other loans that are similar to this?
This is the first loan that we have done in the housing department that falls in this category, where we took an existing business that is operating on Bear Street, where we're doing that 5.5-block redevelopment, and where that business elected to stay rather than to move. The others all wanted to move. We bought them out. These folks wanted to stay.
And I think that's great. But back to my question. So you're creating a new criteria to monitor whether this particular TC Grocery, Inc. meets the conditions of the city.
Well, it's similar to some of our housing burn-off loans, where they have to meet certain criteria, as I mentioned, like keeping the taxes, no code issues, police department issues, safety issues, those kinds of things we're already doing in our contracts associated with our residential projects.
Okay. And I'm all for a neighborhood grocery store. I hear many times in different communities in my respective district wanting new or improved grocery stores and that sort of thing. So I'm supportive of the concept. How long has this grocery store been at this location?
The grocery store has been at the location, I just have to guess, 30 to 40 years. The present owner has been there 2001, and I'm just guessing that because it looks like a early 60s construction to me.
And they own, the operator of the grocery store owns the building?
Yes, and the family owns the building, operates the grocery store on a day-to-day basis as a family business.
Okay, very good. All right. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor Lampert. You know, I want my colleagues to go down to the Bear Street area and see how it has just transformed in that area. This is a grocery store that needed some facelift. And I have a sketch of the grocery store in my office of how it used to look and what the city is going to do once they finish with partnering with him on how it's just going to change the face of that neighborhood. And because we're dealing, and I guess because we're dealing with inner city neighborhoods that have not had this type of development, I have to commend the housing department for thinking once again outside of the box to make these type of projects work. And that's what it's going to take at the end of the day. The same thing on Spring Avenue, the same thing on Bear, the same thing that's going to happen long term on Grand Avenue, the same thing that's going to happen all over that district, long term on Hatcher, long term on Lamar. We have got to take this type of approach to make the type of development that we need in communities like the South Dallas. So I will be supporting this. It's in my district. I think, and I commend that store owner for staying there and not moving. But are we through with that area? No, we're not. We still got a lot of work to do down in the Bear Street area. Habitat is down in that area. You have a number of other nonprofit organizations that's working down in that area. We're trying to work with our housing department to get some money to deal with the homeowners who live down in that area to help them too in the area. But I think Bear Street looks totally different than it looked 15 years ago. And so it is a wonderful thing to go down there and see how that neighborhood looks now. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hackins.
Thank you, Mayor. Apparently you made a great point. Jerry, you know, and also Dave, you know, we got to go back and look at the 2006 bond package. And I believe on Prop 8, this was some of the money that we did put in the bond package to make sure that this was one of the tools in the box we could use. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Killingworth. And if you go back to Prop 8, it said in 2006, the general obligation bond fund may be used for private, commercial, industrial, retail, residence, and mixed-use development in the southern area of the city. Fund provided as a catalyst to promote private economic development may be used for planning, design, construction, acquisition land, and public street. If you go back there, and that's what I've been saying in the past, it's very important that we go and review the 2006 bond package program, and you see that these tools were put there for things we're trying to come out today. Jerry, in that particular Prop 8, how much money do we have left in that Prop 8 fund?
Unsold. I can only speak for my portion. I'm not quite sure.
Is anyone here who knows?
Economic development. For our portion, it's $10.5 million that's unsold.
$10.5 million?
Yes, sir.
And you said economic development. What do you mean by that statement?
Well, economic development and housing split 41 million.
Hey, C, can you come forward, please? In the Prop 8, what is our balance?
I don't have that attachment with me, but I can certainly get it to you as soon as possible.
I think we need to know that. We need to find out how much balance we have in Prop 8. So we got many projects going forward in the southern sector. We need to find out what we got left.
We're getting that information.
Okay, and I think all the council should know that information. We need that so we know. Keep a tab, Dave. Thank you for bringing it up, but we definitely need to know that. But, Carol, this is a good program. Again, you know, go back to 2006 bond package. Read that package and look at all these different propositions. We have tools there for these types of development. Without those tools in the 2006 bond package, those tools would not be here today. Again, thank you. Yes, sir. Jerry.
Can I make a little make a little sales pitch?
Yes, sure can.
For our portion, we've got $10.5 million left. $5.5 million is supposed to be sold in the spring 2010 at our next bond sale, with the last tranche of our money sold whenever the next sale would be. which would probably take us into 2011. This has been such a successful way for us to deal with acquiring properties for catalyst projects in the southern sector and to do redevelopment that I'm hoping that somewhere along by the time we get to that last tranche that is being sold in 2011 that there's a new bond proposition with a new larger piece on there so that Carl and I can continue to do this.
Mayor Soon, City Manager, on our next bond sale, is this particular bond is in that package? Just, you know, on schedule?
Well, the next bond program hasn't been put together yet. Jerry was doing a little bit of a sales pitch.
So. Well, I'm trying to do a second motion. I think we need to have it. I'm just trying to find make sure we're on schedule.
It'll be put together and brought to y'all for review, and you'll recommend changes. I suspect it's a 2011 sale.
So the next bond sale, how soon will we be looking at that reviewed and in your recommendation?
About 18 months out, we start working on it, and probably about 8 or 9 months out, it comes to you.
I'm talking bond sale.
Oh, the bond sale. Oh, excuse me, the sale. I was talking about the bond program. Spring of 10, and then you'll have. We'll start in January talking to you about what the financial implications of that
are. Wait, you asked when the sale was going to be?
Yes,
the next
the bond sale's right.
I misunderstood. I thought you said
the bond sale, and I also was trying to find out when would the schedule they would come back to council so we know what program is in the bond to be sold.
End of January, beginning of February, we'll be talking to you about two aspects. One, the financial aspects of what it will cost you, and then what will be in it.
What will be in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we get that probably February or January,
yeah.
Right? Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Mayor. And let me just chime in say, Ms. Davis, you're on point. And where did Ms. Killen's words go? Ms. Killenworth, Jerry, just one general statement, and I kind of painted with a broad brush as it relates to the southern sector. It is so very difficult when you get within the perimeters of the neighborhood and the deplorable conditions in certain neighborhoods that we have. It takes creative thinking and financing and ways to try to figure out what you can do in an underserved neighborhood and try to figure out how we can revitalize. Now, I think, Ms. Davis, that's what we're doing with Bear Street, which you represent the upper portion of Bear Street, and then Bear Street is represented by myself on the lower end. And Jerry and housing, the same thing applies to the BRIC program that we talked about.
Yes,
because there are no areas, there are not many areas in District 4 to just really build, but we need to figure out ways to revitalize. So we've talked about a plan, and we got a little pilot program of understanding of how we can go through the neighborhood and put a brick front possibly on some houses that would give a new look. And I'm only saying that to say that it has taken mere things of that nature to try to figure out how we can beautify the neighborhoods, and you're going to find old structures that have been there for a while that Minya's food store is not going to come in on Bear Street. It's pretty much a reality. So, but the people still have to have a place to shop. So we have to try to accept people such as the person that is doing this particular store and work with them to make sure that we keep that neighborhood not only revitalized but stable, and that they too have an opportunity to enjoy a better quality of life. So I just kind of wanted to point that out. The same as what we're doing with the Lancaster Corridor and the Lancaster Corridor Initiative. We are going up and down there doing the same thing on Lancaster that we're doing on Bear, and that is revitalizing, knocking down some structures, trying to build up and facade those that we can. So just wanted to commend you for that, and I'll close with this statement. Mary, when we do have the bond sales and we begin to program. I've been asking for many years that for the sake of the southern sector, for the sake of the southern sector, in this upcoming bond sale, let's put the programs for the southern sector on the front end, so that we won't, when we pass the bond, it won't be 2016 and 18 before the things happen. I want to push and for folks to understand that it is my intention, and I know that I will have my colleagues' support, that on the programs, whatever it is we're going to do for the southern sector, let's let those bonds be a part, as many as we can, on the front end, the first set of bonds being sold, because so many years it has been that we've supported the bond program and we've gotten things in the bond, but they were the last things that were sold on the back side of the bond when it was time for a new bond program. I don't know if you all understand what I'm saying, but I certainly understand it. And so I'm pushing and suggesting that we program again in the southern sector and Pleasant Grove and all over the southern sector in Oak Cliff, the front end of that bond program sale, and let's bring some significant revitalization and attention to those areas. But thank you, Chair.
Mr. Allen, please.
I too am supportive of this agenda item. I believe number one, it helps increase the tax base, but number two, it increases the quality of life. We do have an older structure that's been there for a while, and when you go in there and spend the money to fix it up, to give this appearance, then the pride goes in the neighborhood itself, and we'll continue to do that. So I too will be supportive of this for those very reasons, and at the end of the day, it benefits everybody, all citizens of Dallas, the tax base, and then also the quality of life of folks, and it will be a good nucleus for a starting point, good energy being spent on this thing. Now, Councilman Carraway, I will say on that bond program that's coming up, and I'm gonna fight you like a junkyard dog when it comes to District 10 and getting out there with you, so I'll be out there front on that bond program.
Ms. Davis, I'm assuming you made the motion. Mr. Allen, you seconded it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, item number 30, please. 30.
Item number 30 is to authorize approval of a recommended alignment plan that increases the right-of-way width from 50 to 80 feet on Wheatland Road from the Dallas City Limits to Lancaster Road. Councilmember Atkins, hold the item.
Jill Jordan, please. Jill, on this particular alignment, you're widening 50 feet to 80 feet on Wheatland Road from Dallas City Limit to Lancaster. There is another portion of this project on Plaza Road on Lancaster, right? Prior to that, we got a $4.5 million development.
This project is for proximity. The construction side would be for about $4.5 million, and it will extend Plaza Road, run all the way to the city limits with Lancaster.
Okay. When you do this alignment, what are we going to do with Wheatland Road?
Most of Wheatland Road will be expanded. There is about a 1,500 foot section that we're doing that realignment. So the other abandoned portion.
When you said abandoning, you think you're going to abandon the 1,500 feet of Wheatland Road?
That small section.
You want to abandon that?
Yes, we would no longer use that. We would realign it.
I thought, to my understanding, that we're going to keep that open. When you went to the community and you met with the community, you said that road would be open when you redo the new alignment.
Okay. My understanding is that portion of that alignment Stand corrected. Yes, it will remain open.
It will remain open?
Yes, sir.
Since we will remain open, are we going to do any repairs on that particular road while we do the new alignment? We would like to repave the road and make sure it's in condition, got a condition, you know, to maintain it while we're doing the new alignment.
The plans are to maintain that road while the construction is being made, but the emphasis is going to be on that new new alignment.
It looked like I see some little confusion there. So, you know, I'm going to approve this item here, but I want you to come back with me and brief me on what I was going to do with that 1,500 feet on Wigland. You know, my understanding was that we was going to make sure we'll maintain that alignment, the 1,500 feet. And if we're going to do that, we got to make sure that, you know, we got it, you know, on record today. That's what we're going to do so we do not have to change that. Jill, are you familiar with it?
Yes, and all of our contracts require...
Well, but I understand what you just said, but then there was some confusion there. They were not on the same page. I'm trying to make sure we're on the same page when we go forward.
Well...
Because once one person said they're going to abandon it, the other person said we're not going to abandon it. So I'm trying to make sure where we are.
Okay. Well, we can meet with you in...
Okay.
Second.
Thank you very much.
Any opposed? So Madam Secretary.
Item number 34 is a resolution declaring approximately 73,311 square feet of city-owned land improved with a one-story brick building located near the intersection of Westmoreland Road and Platinum Way and authorizing its advertisement for sale by sealed bid with a minimum bid of $852,910. Councilmember Atkins.
Councilman Atkins. Item number 34.
I guess I need to speak to AC. This particular item I see, is this the one that
we looking at the building that the city that I purchased about a year and a half ago?
Yes, sir.
Okay, correct. Okay. And the reason why that we are putting this out as surplus real estate is why?
The original purposes that we were acquiring the building have gone away with our budget reductions, et cetera, and so we do see that it's now surplus and looking to sell.
So we have looked completely, we're going to deal all our inventory on all properties with the city of Dallas, and we're saying that this particular property is a surplus as of today.
That's correct.
Okay. When we purchased this building, there was a history of the building. There was going to be a rental business there. And basically, we bought this building to make sure that this type of establishment is not going to be there. So what I would like to propose, colleagues, that on this particular property that we did buy this piece of property a year ago, I would like to put some restriction on this particular piece of property before we sell it. And those restriction would be no alcohol beverage establishment, commercial amusement use, lodging use, pawn shop use, personal service use, private recreation center, club area use, and no special business use also on this particular property. Because when we bought this property, we were trying to make sure that we did not have those type of business at this particular location. But we also, when we purchased this property, we felt sure that we would move our coal department there and our building permit company there. Is that correct, AC?
Yes, sir.
And they're not going to move there.
If I might just respond to that a little bit differently. What we bought it for is for the use of the building that was intended to be for inspection purposes that we had for the city's operation.
Right.
That's what we bought the building for.
And since we have the budget cut, we're not going to use
not,
that.
We have no longer that particular function that's going on because of the reduction in staff.
And in the future, do we think that we're going to need another location to do improve our service? If we do need to move our coal or our permit, The reason why I thought that we purchased the building is to make sure that our code department, our building permit department is moved more south. And now, since the budget, we're not going to be moving more south, it's going to be not there in the future. Are we looking at another location that we can move the code and the building permit office more south?
Well, one of the things that's when we bought the property, of course, we'd had this unprecedented boom in building permit activity. Since then, as we're all painfully aware of, we've had a significant reduction in that. We have actually taken four field district offices and combined them into two. We thought we were going to use this for future expansion, but we no longer have that need. We're hoping the economy will turn back around as soon as possible, and at that time we'll reevaluate our need. But for the next two or three years, we don't foresee either having a use for the building or having the funds to go in and do the improvements to the building.
Okay. I have no problem with that. I still move with those amendments that I put on there.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor? Opposed? Hearing none. So move fast. Madam Secretary?
Thank you. We move now to addendum item number 1, authorized supplemental agreement number 4 to the service contract with SAP Public Services, Inc., for the purchase of additional software licenses and 2 years of associated maintenance support for the Pay One project. Councilmember Newman pulled the item.
Councilman Newman.
Okay, 1 second here. My favorite topic, Pay One. Jody, could you come up a second? Thank you, Mayor. Council members Jody and I visited this morning prior to the council meeting, but subsequent after I pulled the item for discussion. As a byproduct of our conversation this morning, I think one of the things that you suggested, which I thought was a good suggestion, was for me as a council member that has an ongoing concern with the dollar amounts that we continue to spend on the Pay One system, and yet I don't embrace it as this individual council member, offline I need to probably visit with you and Warris additionally about this. Anything that comes up as it relates to Pay One, Ryan, I have grave concerns because of the amount of money that we continue to put into this, and I've yet to see that, in my singular opinion, maybe other council members, a good return on that investment. And so one of my questions was, how much thus far have we invested in the Pay One system?
We spent $27 million to implement the system that is billing over $500 million a year. So that's why it's my favorite project, because it provides for those revenues, to be frank.
And Mayor and council members, I don't have any problem with the licenses, but that's what this agenda is for,
yes,
just
sir.
The licenses. So I don't have any problem with licenses. My challenge is to fill philosophical challenge with the dollar amount that we're spending on this software and this program, and in my one opinion, I don't see the net result yet. So I'm just on the record communicating that I continue to have a concern as it relates to this Pay One system and the dollar amounts we put on it. So I won't make the motion to approve, Mayor,
but
I will yield the floor, and I won't vote against it, but I continue to have concerns about it, and I will take you up on your offer that you made at the conclusion of our discussion this morning, Jody, to put Warris under the bus and make it all his problem. That's what she said, Warris. That's what Jody said. I'm joking. No, she spoke kindly of you, Warris. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. Ms. Matinsky.
Can you turn around? I want to see the bus tracks on the back. I'm going to be really quick here. You know, this is one of those deals where, as some of you know, I've been involved in technology before I got on the council, and still am involved in it. And a couple of, you know, one adage that I continue to live by is that when you get involved in technology projects like this, they always cost more than you think they're going to cost. They take longer than you think they're going to take. And the one that I hope doesn't take place in this case is they sometimes don't work quite as well as you thought they would work in the beginning. If we can get two out of three of those, we'll be okay. As Jody said, we do bill an awful lot of dollars with this system. It's complicated. It's complex. It's not easy to implement going from where we were on the old legacy system to where we're heading with this. But I think it does give us the foundation in the future that we can expand and bring a lot of other city processes to run on that system. And in the end, it will be a good investment for us. So with that, I'm going to move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. All in favor? Opposed? Thank you. Madam Secretary.
Addendum item number 7 is an ordinance amending Chapter 2 of the Dallas City Code to eliminate, 1, the Dallas Commission on Productivity and Innovation, and, number 2, the Youth Commission. We do have 3 speakers on the item. The first speaker is LeVar Thomas. LeVar Thomas, if you'll please come forward, state your name and address for the record. You will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is LeVar Thomas, 24/7 Club Manor Drive, Dallas, Texas, 75237. I have had the opportunity to work with, fight with, and play with a lot of you over the last couple of years and couple of months. And some of the things that you guys may not know about me is that I am from the 75237 zip code, which has one of the highest crime rates in the city of Dallas. I am 28 years old, and I'm an African-American man. Statistics should tell you that I should not be standing here today, but I am. While a lot of my friends were making decisions that got them in prison, locked up, or dead, I was at the City of Dallas Youth Commission meetings, being taught about the process, being taught about City Hall, being taught about how to take an active role in my government. Because those seeds were planted in me then, I have gone on to run for city council. I have gone on to serve on many boards and commissions free of charge for this city. The importance of the City of Dallas Youth Commission cannot be measured in dollars, cannot be limited to 3 minutes. And the fact that it is up for elimination without so much as a whisper is troubling. Many of us have been on many different sides of many different issues over the past, everything from hotels to TIF funds to art districts. But the basic premise of many of our arguments are as it relates to the vision that we hold for the City of Dallas, our future, how we see it shaped. I want to close with this. We invest in buildings, we invest in everything. But if we do not invest in our children, if we do not invest in our future, then all of these wonderful buildings that we are building, these edifices, these ornate monuments of construction, will serve as nothing more than monuments of our greatest failure. That when we have the opportunity to invest in a person or a building, we chose a building. Please do not leave our youth unattended. Please save the Youth Commission. Please revisit this, table this, do whatever it takes to save the Youth Commission. It is in the best interest of us all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Madam Secretary.
Your next speaker is Tiffany Young.
Good morning to the mayor and the council. I am Tiffany Young. I reside at 4024 O.B. Crow, Dallas, Texas, 75227. Most recently, I served the city as a member of the Dallas Park and Recreation Board, but I got my start in civic engagement as serving as a member of the first youth commission in the City of Dallas, and I was appointed by that one person whose idea it was, and that was former Councilwoman Barbara Mallory Caraway. Just want to say, Martin Luther King Jr. said, our lives began to end the day we stopped caring about things that matter. And this is something that's near and dear to my heart, and that's the idea of youth and making sure that we invest in the youth that are coming behind us. Back in June, our own mayor said that despite challenging times, we must continue investing in our youth. And that's a quote from Mayor Tom Leppert as he spoke at an AT&T internship event. And I want each and every one of you to consider that. When we looked at the daytime teen curfew, how many of you engaged your youth commissioner in the activity that was going on as we discussed that? How many of you engaged with your youth commissioners on things that interest them? Mr. Cadane's commissioner wanted to be here today, but she's taking the PSAT. We do have a commissioner that will speak to you after me, and I want to commend her for coming down and taking time out of her day to come down and speak to you all. But I wanted to say to you all that I know the investment and the time that I took out in serving as a member, and these young people need that same opportunity afforded to them. So I want to ask you all to consider tabling this, to consider keeping this on the plate. Have we rolled up our sleeves as a council, as a city, to see what other things we can do to make sure that this commission stays intact and that these young people have things to participate in? We found $120,000 to do a study on a mall over in Oak Cliff to tell us some things that we really already knew about that mall. Have we taken the same time to find some creative ways to take care of our youth and to invest in our youth and make sure that they grow up to be healthy and responsible citizens? So I just ask you to consider those things. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Young. Madam Secretary.
Your next speaker is Priscilla Barber.
Good morning. As previously stated, I'm Priscilla Barber, and I reside at 446 Hillville Drive, Dallas, Texas, 75241. First, I'd like to say good morning to the mayor and the rest of the council and everyone present. I'm grateful for the opportunity to stand before you today. Today, I stand to ask one question. How important is this city's future to you? I ask this because a commonly used statement is, the youth are our future, and Dallas and its inhabitants deserve the best future possible. And that's exactly what the Youth Commission prepares us for. It gives the youth of our city quality leadership training, opportunities to be exposed to the democratic process, and it also allows the youth in various districts to finally have a voice. And how will we be a productive city without the youth's voice? The Youth Commission prepares us to be future leaders of Dallas. It gives our city an advantage because its leaders are in tune with the youth's needs. Why? Because we have a healthy medium that allows the youth in the schools, the recreation centers, the libraries, and the parks to relay their needs to their city officials. If the Youth Commission is no longer in existence, you lose that healthy medium. You lose the ability to effectively connect with the youth in our city. And you lose the voice of those who eventually take your seats. As a member of the Dallas Youth Commission, I have had some of the most rewarding experience. The most significant of those is the Scream Out Against Smoking, where I had the opportunity through the Youth Commission to connect with a group of young people at Sinking Hills Recreation Center. Those young people range from ages 8 to 11 years old. And I say this is the most significant because as I was presenting to this group of young people, I was so inspired by a little girl who came to me afterwards, and she said, "Thank you so much for coming out. Because of this presentation, I will now tell my dad to stop smoking." And at the end, she said, "How can I be on the Youth Commission when I'm in high school?" And I will leave you with this thought. If you vote to eliminate the Youth Commission, you take away that little girl's wish to one day become a leader in her city. You take away an imperative asset to the city of Dallas. Thank you.
That concludes your speakers on this item.
Ms. Huffley.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Do we have a city manager?
Yes,
First of all, I want to thank our speakers today. Thank you so much for being with us and for sharing your experiences and how our Youth Commission affected your lives. I think that's very good to hear, and we appreciate your sharing that with us. Ms. Soon, when I saw this on the agenda, I was a little surprised. I don't remember discussing this as a council, either the elimination of the Youth Commission or the Commission on Productivity and Innovation. Did we have a council discussion on that?
I can just tell you, I went back. It was a part of the budget. It was in the budget from the beginning, the cut. Youth Commission was in the park budget cuts. Productivity and Innovation was in City Manager's Office cuts. It's in all the paperwork. I've had some discussions with some of you individually, but when the budget passed and there was no money to support them, this had to come to have an official end, and so that's where they where it came from.
I just hadn't remembered in our budget conversations having this discussion, which I think is an important one to have. And that's not to say that there may be some commissions that we could better do without or that we might want to seek private funding for, but I do wish that had been brought to the forefront, because there are, I know students who serve on the Youth Commission who do get a lot out of it, like you have in your experience, and I think that is, and frankly the Commission on Productivity and Innovation, I have also talked with some of their members, and I know that they've brought to us, I think, some important points for us to consider in how to make our city run more efficiently. So I just wish we'd had a broader discussion before we had this arrive on our agenda. So I would like to see, I think some of our members are looking at ways that we can fund this outside of city council funds. So I would just applaud those efforts, and I hope that we can move forward on that, especially our Youth Commission, which I do think provides not only an important resource for the city to hear what our youth are concerned about, but also I think, as some of our speakers pointed out, it's a very important way for students and young people to get involved with the city, to work on issues of importance, and also just to see what the possibilities are in working with government, taking a leadership role in their city. So I'll look forward to hearing from my colleagues on this. Thank you, Madam, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mary, I looked at the budget, and I saw that it was a lot of things on the budget. I, too, like my colleagues, wish that was just brought out. I knew that we was going to be losing some of our youth programs, but I did not know that we was talking about eliminating a whole commission, which is the Youth Commission. I think it's totally unfair for us to do that, because they haven't came out and really done anything. They haven't complained. They haven't griped.
Well, we wouldn't shut somebody off for complaining or griping.
Oh, I understand that.
It was simply, it's a matter of, it takes about $85,000, $87,000 a year to support, and as we were doing cuts, that was one of the cuts, and it's in the process. I mean, we could have had a more holistic, more robust decision, but it was always there.
Well, I
understand.
I know that we did our cuts. I just think that should not have been one of them.
Okay.
The Youth Commission. I would not be supporting that we vote on cutting the Youth Commission, not today. I think it needs to be up for more discussion, and perhaps try to figure out a way, how do we put the money, if we can, back into this budget to save our youth. That is just a real important board, I think, the Youth Commission. I think we just need to figure out a way, at least bring it up. What committee would it go to for discussion? The quality of life?
I think you'd be more likely to be at budget, finance, and audit, because at this juncture it's a question of budget. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm asking, I'd like to make a motion that we take it back to the budget, finance, with Mr. Allen being the chair for both of them, yeah, for discussion, and then let them get back with us.
This is about $120,000 for both of them.
$120,000?
Mm-hmm.
Mary, I guess the question is, do you want to eliminate the youth commission?
No, and when, not necessarily, and I had heard some discussion of other ways to handle the youth commission, which I think is worth the time pursuing, that are outside the tax dollars, but continues the city involvement and the youth involvement with the city.
Well, I would like to move that we at least take it back to that committee, and they might come up with some type of other way, and I don't know, I don't have the answer today, but come up with something else that it might still keep the youth intact. It might not be called a youth commission or something. We might just come up with another innovative way to at least keep the kids intact.
In regard to that, I know that we run into a challenge because we don't have any budget dollars. So even to kind of hold it, we'd have to go find different budget dollars. So would it be reasonable then, if that's the will of the council, to pass, in effect, a resolution or non-binding that would ask you to go back and come up with different options of ways that we can continue with the youth commission, albeit outside of the budget?
And
there may be options, there may not, but at least to come back and look at it and see if there's different ways that we may go at it.
Okay.
Would that be reasonable to people on the council?
What I'm hearing is basically at the end of the day, we got $120,000. We got to find. You go out and find the money. Maybe we.
Well, I think what I'm almost asking our city manager to do is: there ways that we could accomplish the same thing? In other words, there'd be a youth commission, but it would be outside of the city, so it doesn't take city dollars. So could it be a sponsorship of another group? Could there be another group that would take this on? I'm not sure what the option is, but something would be outside, because where we are today is we've taken it out of the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So this, in one sense, almost becomes a formality. If we don't do this, then all of a sudden we've got the same situation of trying to find money that we don't have.
But I will agree with you if they could even go out, like you said, and find a grant.
That's where I'm going out to say, is there ways outside the budget then? But what we would need to do is ask our city manager then to take, you know, whatever period of time that you think is reasonable, Mary, I don't even know what that would be, but come back and present various options that would be available.
We can do that.
Ms. Carroway, I think you've looked at some of those. That's fair.
Let me just jump in. I was trying to wait to hear from all of the colleagues. One, the youth commission is something that's been very dear to me, because as I look at a couple of them that are here that have already went through the youth commission, and then Priscilla, who's here, that's involved with it today, it is certainly an important entity for our city and for our youth. And I applaud you and the three of you, because you've come down, and just as you see it, the youth are our future. It's been no secret of my involvement with the teams and the team summits and the kids throughout the city. That is my focus, and that is certainly the focus of this entire city council as well. Now, notwithstanding with where we are today, I have been doing some research in trying to find a way to continue to move forward with the youth council, maybe with an outside entity, still asking my colleagues to still make your appointments to the youth council. I don't have the name of it at this point, the Youth Team Summit Council or the Youth Team Council. That will take place and still have the same authority and vision and mission for the youth of all of the city. It's currently being looked at, and but it's not all put together. But I want you to know, and Mayor, you're trying to
can I ask the two of you to get together, so whatever ideas you've got, visit with the city manager, then the combination of the two of you come back to us, and again, whatever the reasonable time is, and say, here's some different options that may be out there.
And yes, we can do that now. Do we have to move this toward a vote today?
Well,
can we incorporate all of it together?
Again, we do not.
Or what do we have to do?
Yeah, we'll finish the discussion.
Right.
Again, I want to reinforce
that we do not have dollars for these today.
Absolutely.
So in one sense, this is almost a formality. If we want to come back and reconstitute it in some way, that's fine. That's what I was leading to. But we don't have dollars for it today.
Right. So and I guess what I'm saying to you all, should we just delay the discussion? We don't have the dollars. They're not meeting. What is the...
Well, I think we're going to have to deal with these two. At a minimum, the other one, deal with that. But my thought would be to do both of them, to at least clean it up from budget to this. That's the will of the council. And then clearly, given the comments on the youth, have... And you can be an important part of that, but have the city manager come back to us with options on what we can do to keep the concept of the youth commission alive, even though it may be constituted in a different format.
And then to the city attorney, Mr. Perkins, how? Yeah, let's get this done so that we can. Moving this forward today, how can I make a friendly amendment to this move that will ensure us moving forward and doing the things that's going to allow the teams and the team council to survive and not just completely disappear, but away from the city's budget? Because I think if we can accomplish this goal, during all of our team summits, the city has not been out of not one dime. Am I right, Mayor Soon?
On your team summit?
On team summit.
No, you take care of
those. So there's plenty of support out here, but we need to be able to get those things formulated.
Well, I don't know that it takes an amendment. If you can request the support of your fellow council members,
directing the city manager to.
Well, you know, I thought the matter was for this not to be a city commission anymore.
But direct the city manager on doing research to come up with other options that would be available that would allow the concept of the youth commission to come forward, even if it's outside of the context of the city.
That's the way to do that.
And then let's put a timetable on this. So that we can.
I mean, that's what you could recommend approval of this and say, with the stipulation that the manager come back within 45 days with a recommendation to how to constitute the youth commission outside the structure of the city's budget. And
that is your motion.
All right, you won't repeat my motion.
I shouldn't have done it to begin with. And you've got other speakers.
Okay, I'll move my lips while you do it.
It's simple. It's moving to approve the item with the direction that the city manager come back with different alternatives and options to preserve the concept of the youth commission, albeit outside of the city budget.
All right, that's my motion.
Now, let's go back to... Let me come back...
Within 30 days.
30 days.
Right.
Move and second. Moved and second. Now let's go back to the discussion. Mr. Atkins, please. And sorry for that interruption.
No problem, man. Again, you know, thanks for the use of time out. But I think this is more important than trying to separate something from the city to the private sector, because every year you're going to try to find a funding mechanism to do that. So you do that. Should we do all our commissions the same way? I mean, that's my concern. Dave Cook and Paul Dyer, please come forward. I know that. Paul, and I was very, very due diligent on this budget. And I made some recommendations, you know, that most of the colleagues did not support me on my recommendation. But there was some recommendation that from the park department, and I believe, colleagues, we need to pay very, very close attention when we vote on to cut different programs. Paul, this program was under the park department. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. And when you have this under park department, you had your staff to monitor this program.
Correct.
Okay. Now, when it was on the Park Department, was this a line item?
It was not a line item in that we had $590,000 for youth development, which included a series of programming for teens, which involved job skills, resume production, entrepreneur skills, technology club, mentoring, whatnot. And there were, it was a smaller subset of our system, but in that group of five employees, they also managed the teen council. So that's something that.
Okay, so in essence, there. It was not a $97,000, $120,000 line item for the youth commission. It's way below that amount of money because when the city manager, when you made your recommendation to furlough five of your staff members, you cut a whole lot of different programs.
Yes, sir.
Staff, right? So when you reduce your staff, you cut all these programs.
Correct.
So therefore, if you got funding for your staff, this program would never got cut. It would never be sitting here because you would not make that recommendation to the city manager to be cut. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes,
okay, Mary, number one, your number you have with $120,000, where did that number come from?
The $120,000 is the support funding for the Innovation Productivity Committee and for the Youth Committee. The Youth Commission is about $87,000.
Okay, now, you can't say $87,000 if I look at a line item budget because you have, when you furlough five people, you do not have a line item for the youth commission. You know, those five employees work on more than one program. Is that correct, Paul?
Well, it is clearly listed that cuts were going to reduce the support for that particular program. And that's when you reduce staff, the work that they were doing goes away.
But that's not one program. There was more than one program. It was many programs got cut.
Yeah, but when you figure out the money that applies to that program, you say, how many hours did that individual work for that program? And if they worked half their time or three-quarters of their time, then you figure that by their hourly rate, and you say it took $87,000 for that person to support that program, or that number of persons. Now, it may have been that that person was doing some other things, too, but all that we cut is how much did that program spend on the way of support.
Okay. Paul, so when you submit your budget to the city manager and the city manager submitted to the council, what was the dollar amount that you cut when you furloughed those five employees?
$590,000.
So it was $590,000 that you submit to the city manager to cut. And out of $500,000, that if you said the youth commission, what was the budget for that program?
Right. It's a lot like a recreation center. We'll have five or six employees, and we'll have 20 programs. And when you're asked to go back and try to prorate that amount, there's some synergy in having four or five people there together. They can offload things. But if you try to prorate a piece of that activity, that proration, then, as the manager said, is our best guess of what that would cost to manage it without anything else.
Okay, so this particular item, the U Commission, that it was never got cut if the $500,000 got funded, it still would be in place today.
That's correct.
Correct. The $500,000, if you try to put a line item over there, you cannot justify how much it actually costs for the budget of your commission because you have five employees working on more than one project.
I think you could come up with a reason.
So if you come with a reason, what would that number be? This budget came from the Park Department, not from the City Manager Department. You gave this to the city manager, said, this is my budget, but you gave him a $500,000 budget cut. You did not say the U Commission is $120,000 or what.
That's
you said
correct.
The budget. You just cut everything.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. correct.
And that's what I'm trying to get to. They cut everything. Now, each year, if we go to the private sector, say we got to go raise the money, That means every year that we had to find appropriations to fund that program.
Right.
Okay. Tom Perkins. And Dave, question to you, Dave, first. That on the budget, this was on the park department. So on the park department, your budget, your recommendation, Paul, you decide to cut this. From the park department, you decide to cut
That's
because
correct.
You decided to do this. Okay. And you brought it to us.
Of the $13 million in cuts, that was one of the recommendations.
That was one recommendation.
That's right, yes.
Not the state of management recommendation. I want to make sure that clear. This was not a state of management recommendation. This was a park department recommendation.
Well,
Mary, let me finish. This was a park department recommendation because he gave you the budget that this is what I want to cut. And we at the city council said we're going to cut this, but we could have a right to fund the park department.
That's fair.
For our question. So now you come today is now we're trying to find how do we going to fund this program going forward. So, Mayor, I guess your recommendation is if we go out to the private sector trying to separate this, do we every year have to have a number because the private sector says, what is the budget? How much is it going to cost to do this? And every year we got to make a recommendation from the park department or somewhere to go out and make sure this fund. Because what I'm trying to make sure that we can institutionalize this, so this is not just a one-time fix.
And I think that's what I was talking about, saying, what are the options and what are the alternatives? Because to be truthful, I can't answer that question for you now.
Right.
So I was trying to almost say, take that in, and that would be one of the factors in any of the options is kind of the sustainability of it. So I think it's a fair question to ask. I'm not sure there's an answer on the table, but I think whatever option or alternative the council selected, clearly that has to be one of the considerations.
Okay. Well, I'm fair with that, but my main concern is, number one, we're going to make sure this goes forward, institutionalized. We just want to stop today. If we got a plan, we got to have a plan going forward.
And I think that's what we're asking to come back to and lay out that plan in a way that hopefully the council will be comfortable with it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
With that, we've run in, it's 11:30, and we've run into the need to recess now. So I'm going to hold the conversation. We'll go into recess. We'll come back. Pick up. Which one? There's one item we may try to get out of the way quickly.
47.
Okay, why don't we bring item 47 up? We'll try to deal with that quickly. If you'll read that in the record, Mr. Newman has a conflict of interest and he's excused himself.
Item number 47 is authorize a 5-year service contract for Depository Services, Bank of America, N.A., lowest responsive applicant of 4.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? No discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. Why don't we count on being back into session at 1:15? 1:15. And we're in recess.
Recess at 11:32.
We'll leave it just as it is. Thank you.
Mr. Atkins was speaking. I believe he finished his thoughts. So, Ms. Koop.
Just a couple of questions. I'm not going to speak to the Youth Commission because I think we've already done that.
Ms. Koop, if I could interrupt you for just
sure.
A second. I wanted to make one quick introduction. We have a group with us, and I would ask George Straz if you could have your group stand. Young Professionals is a leadership development organization. It's sponsored by the Dallas Regional Chamber. They have approximately 350 members representing and cultivating the next generation of civic and business leaders. With us today are members of the YP Policy Committee who are here as observers to better understand some of the issues and challenges facing the Dallas City Council. We appreciate having you all with us. Thank you very much.
1:32.
And with that, Ms. Koop, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm not going to speak to the Youth Commission. I think we've spoken to that quite some time for quite some time this morning. But a couple of things, Mayor. Does anybody, and I haven't heard any criticism or any conversation yet about the Productivity and Innovation Committee. This was a suggestion from the Efficiency Team that that committee be one that's sunsetted. I don't have a problem with that. It was formed originally kind of as a temporary committee, and then, you know, as all things around here, it just all of a sudden it became permanent, right? So along with that, and I will suggest after we get through voting on the Youth Commission that we take up the productivity and innovation, sunsetting. But Mayor, also, I'd like, and every other political organization does this. They have a sunset review committee, and it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to sunset the committee. It just means to take a fresh look at it, take fresh eyes on it. Is the mission of the committee still viable, or does it need to be changed? How much do they spend? Those kinds of things. And still, I think that came up in the budget, and I hope that we will get that on some type of committee here.
By the number of people that are nodding their heads as you're talking about that, I think that's a done deal.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Yep. I think that makes a lot of sense. Thanks, Ms. Coop. Mr. Salazar, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Actually, the sunset review process was called the budget, and that's why it's still being cut. I was just going to suggest that, I mean, if we take no action and just defer it to the Budget and Finance Committee, to give an opportunity to look at the different opportunities as far as how we can keep these programs running, not necessarily within the city, but maybe in conjunction with another entity. We already have an infrastructure that's set up. We already have a system on how not just the Youth Commission, but also the Productivity Committee operates. You know, what happens, for example, what happens if you do no longer have a Youth Commission? Does that mean you no longer have a teen court? If you don't have a teen court, that means that a lot of kids who had an opportunity to have cases heard before a teen court will actually now have to go before a real judge. And they'll have to hire attorneys. And they'll have, I mean, there's different other consequences of what happens. Because if it doesn't go to teen court, it's still a violation. It's a Class C misdemeanor, punishable by up to $500 fine, and it can go on your record. So my concern is that by eliminating it now, we're also eliminating other programs that are beneficial to our youth. And I don't see what the harm would be in following what Ms. Davis recommended, was to give it some time to move it over to the Budget and Finance Committee. Have we discussed with the DISD if maybe they can help us, and looking at the infrastructure we have, and maybe they can put in place personnel that already deal with these similar issues and run it through the DISD, and maybe like we did with the health, some more health programs through the county, kind of move it over and have it run through there, but in coordination, for example, with our courts so that they can continue the teen court system. So that's my concern as far as the youth, because if you just don't eliminate just the commission, you're eliminating other things that they were involved in. I mean, because I think the Youth Commission was a part of that that process as well. So am I not correct?
Teen court's out.
That's what I mean, and that's a great point.
But it is already gone.
Well, it's already gone, but it doesn't mean that we can't put it into the program if we find an alternative source of not just funding, but also personnel. And like I said, we need to try with the DISD or even innovative committee. We can try with the community colleges. We have other entities that are out there that can assist us and look at these programs and say, you know, that's something that we might be able to help work with you on. I just think that, you know, if you vote it down today, what we're saying again, that like we said in the budget, is we don't care about the youth, we don't care about the consequences, we're just going to dump this and not have to take any responsibility for it. We need to work to find resolutions for these two programs. They've contributed in the past, we're going to continue to contribute in the future, only if we step up and say, let's take a step back, find alternatives, because if we're not willing to do that, and I think it just sends a very bad message to the resident city and to the youth of the city of Dallas.
Thank you, Mr. Salazar. Ms. Marcola, please.
I'm not going to comment on the Youth Commission specifically, but I do want to really reinforce what Councilmember Coop said. I would like for us to consider an ongoing committee that looks at all boards and commissions, perhaps on a rotating basis, maybe covering a quarter of them at a time and going through them on a four-year basis or three- or five-year, but something that on an ongoing basis looks at each board and commission, the resources that it is using from our budget, whether its mission is still relevant, whether it is adhering to its mission. I would really like to encourage that we find a way to create something like that, Mayor.
Yeah, agreed. Ms. Shelley, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And Mr. Salazar, I heard exactly what you're saying, and I could not agree more, but to say that we have to continue to send a positive signal and message to all of the citizens, and especially to our teens, because teens are the future. We do a lot of things, and we say kids, and we do a lot of things for the kids, and it's the kids, it's the kids. But now the kids are on center stage, and we are faced with a decision to have to make some choices. And unfortunately, when you look at the teen council, the youth council, just a couple of weeks ago, we made some appointments to the youth council. This was just a couple of weeks ago, Madam Secretary. We made some appointments to something that we're now, 2 weeks later, talking about sunsetting and putting to rest. Mr. Atkins made some good comments and observations as to how this thing took place. It is no secret as to where I am as related to the teens in this city, because they are the future. And for the past 2 years, Mr. Allen and to Sheffy and all of my council colleagues, and especially as well the mayor, who has supported me with the teen summits at no expense to the city of Dallas. And we basically were out, and we could go and plan some things and do things that was beneficial and proven to be beneficial and make a difference in teenagers' lives. Those things did take place. Now, unfortunately, as we move toward this particular youth council that we're talking about, what I am trying to accomplish is a continuation of the teens' involvement with city government. It was a dream for me, and this is to my colleagues, to involve kids in this room, in this city hall, because this is, they parents may be paying taxes, but they are taxpayers too, because the taxes that their parents are paying, that could have been some tennis shoes or something for some of those kids to go have fun with at the movies. So they are entitled to inhabit all of the benefits that are here in the city to them. I only say that to say that, you know, when I look at the fact that we have our recreation centers and we have different programs and we do different things for the kids, now as we talk about sunsetting, we have to accept the fact of the budget crunch that we're in. But I'm one that don't want to just build buildings and do tax abatements and all of that, and then when it comes to the kids, we can't find the money. But now, given that, I think from the success that we've had with the Teen Summit and to the council, I have begun to convene a group of folks to discuss what method would be best or could be best, and we've asked the city manager to assist and figure out a way how we cannot lose that involvement. I think it is detrimental for us today, however, and we're going to maybe move this thing to a vote or push it to some type of delay, but I think rushing it today may be the wrong signal without working through the process just to say to them, lights out. The reality of it is, lights are out because there's no money. I've accepted that. Lights out. But I think we need to have lights out with a plan and then come and announce the plan
while we implement the reality of the lights out. With that said, I think the teenagers still would feel a part of and not secondary. And I see one or two shaking their heads, so I think I'm going in the right direction. I'm trying to put myself as a teenager looking at the fact that a ruling is coming down, and even though something is going to come, I think they want the ruling to come down with the something that's going to come is where I'm trying to go with this. So with that being said, Mr. Allen, I would ask, and Mayor, I would ask, and you've already graciously said that you would, ask our city manager, and Mary has agreed, and we've been working through it, to assist with the planning of where we go from here, and how do we get here, and what is the best next step to make sure that each council member, and the reason I want to tie the city in but disconnect the city financially, is so that the commitment of the city council would be intact, as whatever we put forward would be that each and every one of us will still make our appointment to this youth council, however it is said to be. And that would be something that would be moving forward as we go. But I don't want to be the one to put all of it together myself. So Jerry, I need to reach out to you and to assist me and Ms. Madrona and Ms. Hassel and Angela, any of you that let's come in as a team, figure it out. We'll work along with Mary. Mary, you give us the directions of what we can and can't do, and then let's agree. But let's make sure the kids understand that we're not taking a switch at them today, and we're going to take them just as serious as we would take a billion-dollar developer that would walk in here, because they are just as important as that billion-dollar developer, because they are our future. If they feel that we're kicking them, then they may kick back, and that's one of the worst things that we want to have happen to this city is a kid kicking back. So I'm going to yield for just a moment. I think you all know where I'm going. We got a team that's going to be meeting in the back room over here, just trying to begin some discussions. And hopefully, Mary, within 30 days, we'll be able to come back with a direction, and we'll be able to address the teams. But I want the teams to understand today that no money is there. No, nothing is going to happen today as it relates to teams and with money. The city is out of this, but we still have a responsibility to make sure that whatever it is that we're doing for kids in this city is the right thing to do. I think I said a whole lot, but I think y'all understood it.
Thank you. Ms. Madrona, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And I will not speak on the other committee, the Productivity Committee, because that was raised during budget, and I think it was Ms. Coop's amendment, correct, Ms. Coop? I believe it was Eric. And so that, I think, was fully discussed. I will speak on the Youth Advisory Council. I think it's a very important and vital committee with our future at stake. I would like to see some type of leadership program, maybe a junior Leadership Dallas. You've got Leadership Texas, you have Leadership Dallas, perhaps a junior Leadership Dallas, that I will think it would probably encompass a lot more than the Youth Advisory Council does now, but it will also open the doors to either maybe the county, the city, the state, and other avenues to open some doors for them, and probably have more than the 15 or 20 youth council members that we currently have. So I think it expands the number of people on the committee, and hopefully something along the lines of Junior Leadership Dallas to prepare them for Leadership Dallas and just other leadership activities for the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. Ms. Hossel, please.
Yes. Before the break, I was just going to caution my colleagues that we shouldn't be spending money that we don't have, but I think Mayor Pro Tem Carraway took care of that, and we understand that that, you know, this is a budget item that we have no money to fund. However, I think everything that Mayor Pro Tem Carraway said, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano said, we've got a great opportunity right now to really make this not just a 15-member youth commission council, but really to take it to the next level with some help from the private sector, and really make it a larger group that can interface with Leadership Dallas and with young professionals groups that are here. So I think we've got some work ahead of us in the next 30 days, but I think it would behoove us to really look at how we can capture all of the great leadership training that's going on and really make this a bigger and more encompassing group, because I do believe the youth is the future. I think we all believe that. And really they could tackle some of the problems that we are having today, specifically graffiti, could be one of the issues that I'd like for them to tackle. So we've got a great opportunity right now to turn this into something much bigger and really to have the private sector involved. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hoskell. Mr. Allen, please.
The, you know, as far as the agenda item today, my attitude is, you know, the decision was, that decision has been made. We made that at budget time, and so the decision's been made. As far as, in particular, the Youth Commission, I really believe it's going to get better. It's going to be better. We're going to get focus to it under the leadership of Dwayne Carraway. Without question, this we will focus on the youth, and it very well might be an outside source that will end up, because there's a lot of good ones that will step up to the plate. We talked at lunch, maybe having it'd be nice to have a monthly meeting in some big boardroom and just with professionals there. So there's a lot of great opportunity. So we're not going to forget those youth. I guarantee you, we're not going to forget them. And I think it's a good ideal to, you know, Dwayne, to let's just move this ball forward and make it even better than what it has been at the end of the day. And I would ask if Deborah Watkins, if you could come and maybe just do a, I know you're doing some work at this point in time, with department heads and looking at the committees that are out there. So if, just see what, you're up to right now to bring us up to speed.
Yes, in working with Councilmember Allen as the chair of the Budget and Finance Committee, the City Secretary's office distributed a memorandum to those departments who serve as boards and commissions, asking specific questions regarding the creation of the board, how long has the board been in operation, what's the purpose of the board, and other specific questions. And we distributed that memo approximately a week and a half ago. We have began to get responses back from the board and commissions, coordinators and our directors, and we're still summarizing that information to share with the city manager before we distribute it to the council. And then we will report it directly to the Budget and Finance Committee. We got those directions, Mayor and Council, when there was the budget discussion and when Ms. Coop brought that information up during the budget discussion.
So there's a process in place that we're going through at this point in time, and then once you go through your process and get the information back, then it will come to Budget, Finance, and Audit, and Councilwoman McGullough and myself will sit there, and then we will bring it to the full committee, and then, of course, everybody can be available and come to that. So,
yes. And we feel comfortable with getting with the city manager staff before we summarize the information.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Deborah, can you come back to the mic? Two things. I had a motion on the floor, and that the motion was on the floor was to take it back, and I guess Ms. Carraway and I are saying the same thing, is to take it back and take a look at how do we want to deal with the whole Youth Commission. Now, the Youth Commission only met once a month. Once a month. For 3 hours. You do the math, that clearly could not be $84,000. I'd rather if it's because we just didn't want to deal with the Youth Commission anymore, we just didn't want to deal with it. But once a month for 3 hours did not take almost $100,000. The math don't add up. Okay? So for whatever reasons we are here, we won't perhaps and I won't be voting. I'll be voting to keep our youth commission. Reason why is, least I think we owe it to our youth who's on that commission to tell them what we're trying to do. If we would have gotten with the chair, and I don't know, Mary, did we get with the chair of the youth commission and let them know that we're not going to have a youth commission anymore?
I did not.
So they don't even know. We at least could have given them that much respect if these are our young adults to let them know that we would not have a youth commission anymore. Some of us have appointed those individuals to the youth commission. Now to tell them that there would no longer be a youth commission, I think is wrong. However, this council decides what they want. I'll be in support of it after I make my love vote. And I only got one vote around the horseshoe. But I think that it's the way we did it. Now, we talk about those committees. You're talking about committees. Do we have to have committees?
Do we have to have board and commission?
Uh-huh.
Some are required by the Dallas City Code. Some are required by the charter.
Okay. What I want to have is a copy that's required by the charter and those that's not required by the charter.
You would like, I'm sorry.
A copy in writing.
Oh, yes.
What's required
I can provide that information.
Yeah. What's required by the charter and what's not required by the charter. And if we're looking at disbanding some of these boards and commissions, then just look at all of them. Just not the youth commission. And let's go out and raise money for the rest of them that we need. And turn them into nonprofit organizations. So, Mayor, that's all I'm saying. However we decide to do it, I just think that somebody should have told the chairman of the youth commission and told those individuals who's on the youth commission that perhaps we will no longer have a youth commission at this point. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We've got a motion on the floor, but let me see if I can capture what I think is the will of the council. If I don't capture it right, then people can come back at me. And if this is, then I'd ask for a substitute motion. I'd ask for, my sense is that number one is that we should go ahead and formally eliminate the productivity and innovation. So point number one would be to eliminate that. Number two is that we leave the youth as it is today, but understand that there is no funding of it, so there won't be meetings, et cetera, and ask the city manager to do two things. One is to convey to the members of the youth commission that it is most likely that this will take a different form in the future, and also solicit changes on what the improvements may be. And then D, related to that, is come back to us within 30 days and identify alternatives, options, etc., that are consistent with the concept and the direction, but may very well be outside of the budget. And then item number three is we give our Budget and Finance Committee 60 days to complete their review of each of the individual boards and commissions under that sunsetting that Ms. Koop spoke about, but in 60 days that, Jerry, you and your team, Mr. Allen, would come back and report to the council in total a recommendation. And it may very well be a white paper that we go into briefings or whatever, but within 60 days we'll get some type of report that will come back. Does that generally capture what it is? If that's the case, if I could get a motion to that effect, Mr. Cadane, if you'll move it, Ms. Margolin will second it. All those in favor of that signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Thank you very much. Madam Secretary, with that, I think now we bounce back to, if you would read 44 and 45 into the record. I realize we don't have anything in it, but we'll read it in the record and then we'll just go.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number 44 is a resolution reporting the City of Dallas candidates to serve on the Collin Central Appraisal District Board of Directors for a two-year term beginning January 1, 2010. Item number 45 is a resolution reporting the City of Dallas candidates to serve on the Denton Central Appraisal District Board of Directors for a two-year term beginning January 1, 2010. There are no candidates for the City Council to consider, therefore there are no action required on these two items that were just read into the record.
And as a result, we'll just pass. We've got 47 out of the way.
Why don't we go to 48 then? I believe there's one speaker on that.
The speaker did cancel, Mr. Mayor. However, before I read 48, the department has requested that item 48 and 52 be considered at the same time. May I read both into the record?
You may.
48 and 52. Thank you. Item number 48 is authorize a historic preservation tax exemption for the Hickory Street Annex located at 501 Second Avenue for a 10-year period on 100% of the land and structure value. Item number 52 is a public hearing to receive comments regarding an application for and an ordinance granting a historic district overlay on property zoned Plan Development District Number 269 on the south corner of Hickory Street and 2nd Avenue. Again, item number 52 is a public hearing. Therefore, we will consider speakers at this time. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve item number 52? Any speakers that would like to speak in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve item 52? Sir, you will have 3 minutes to speak. If you'll please go ahead and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
My name is Myron Dornick, 5026 Maple Springs Boulevard in Dallas, Texas. Technically not here in opposition to the Plan Commission recommendation, although I am representing the property owner, Mr. Gary Kelson and Kelson Properties. We're requesting that this item be deferred until December 9th.
And I'll take a deferral motion from Ms. Madrona just a moment.
Thank you
very much.
Are there any speakers that would like to speak in favor of the CPC recommendation to approve item 52?
Ms. Madrona.
Mayor, thank you. I would like to defer item 48 and 52, leave the public hearing open, and hold this case under advisement to December 9th, 2009 City Council public hearing. This item will go back to the Economic Development Committee.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed to order? We have two items that have to do with appointments to boards and commissions, item 43 and 46. Those will both require an executive session, but given that we've got people in the audience that are waiting on some other items, I'm going to put those until the end of the meeting, so we'll catch those at the end. With that, then, 49 has been deleted. Why don't we move directly to item 50, then?
Thank you. Item number 50 is a public hearing regarding an application for and an ordinance granting the renewal of specific use permit number 1552 for a hotel or motel use on property zoned an HC heavy commercial subdistrict on the north corner of Maple Avenue and Mayan Street.
Mr. Mayor, within 19 notices, property owners have been adjourned to their request. For each 4 replies in favor and 3 replies in opposition, just require a simple majority to approve this.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve this item? Any speakers in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve? If you please step forward, state your name and address for the record. Again, you will be allowed 3 minutes to speak.
Marvin Crenshaw, 5134 Malcolm X Boulevard. I'm not here to speak against or for it. I just want to ask a technical question.
You're welcome to make comments. This isn't a question and answer period.
I want to make a comment regarding the process of this application and all of them. I'll just speak at this time. Chapter 17, Section 3 of the Dallas City Charter states that the City Council shall appoint 15 qualified voters of the City of Dallas who shall constitute the Zoning Commission of the City of Dallas. This went before 15 qualified citizens right now on the Zoning Commission.
If you'd like to make a comment, you're welcome to
do that. But I was asking a question.
I'm sorry. It's not a question and answer period. You're welcome to make the comment. We're not going to get back into Q&A. I'm sorry.
Okay, then, since it's fine, I'll just continue on then. But and also, and this is very important, concerning this, the Zoning Commission statute, and also this and all the rest of anything else that comes up. Did anyone of the council members get paid?
As I said, sir, you're welcome to continue
well,
on the comment.
I just wanted to know because of the fact of this corruption thing that people are talking about all over the city of Dallas regarding zoning cases and council members. I think it's appropriate, the number one, that we follow that process to make sure that we have 15 members on the planning commission as adopted as a charter. And the only way that can change is if you have a charter election. And also, Mr. Mayor, is that since this is on your watch, I mean, you know, we have to, we want to know if anybody can pay or what. Thank you.
Thank you. You can rest assured that if it's on the agenda, that the attorney has reviewed it and that it's consistent with process and the standards of the charter as well as the rules of the council.
No speakers have come forward in opposition to item number 50. Are there any speakers that would like to speak in favor of the CPC recommendation to approve the item? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. We got a motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, item number 51, I believe we have speakers, and that will also take a three-quarters vote.
Item number 51 is a public hearing regarding an application for and a specific use permit for an alcoholic beverage establishment for a private club bar and a Class A dance hall on property zoned a mixed-use district and mixed-use district, an MU3 mixed-use district on the southeast line of Skillsman Street, northeast of Idalia Court.
Mr. Mayor, within 241 notices from property owners within 400 feet of their request, we received no replies in favor, one reply in opposition, and as noted, due to denial by the City Plan Commission, it will require a three-quarter vote of council. Thank you.
We do have one individual signed up to speak on the item, Stephanie Rogers. Stephanie Rogers. Ms. Rogers, you will have 2 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
My name is Stephanie Rogers, 5111 Rocket Ridge, Dallas, Texas. And I guess what I want to say is that we've been in operation since July 16th of 2009 and received our liquor license on the 9th of June. And the only thing that we're requesting now is a dance hall permit. And the area that this club is the entertainment area. There are no houses in this immediate vicinity. And I guess really what I want to say is that there was two other clubs operating there. There's one now. One was closed down for no liquor license, but I feel like that we've done everything that we need to do, and all we're asking for is a dance hall permit.
Mr. Allen.
Ms. Rogers, do you have any further comments? At this point in time, we're still taking speakers, so the council is not able to deliberate on the item.
Okay.
Any further comments?
No.
All right, thank you. That was the only speaker that was signed up to speak. We now open it to the public. Are there any speakers that would like to speak in opposition of the CPC recommendation to deny the item? Any speakers in opposition of the CPC recommendation to deny? Please state your name and address for the record.
Marvin Crenshaw, 5134 Malcolm X Boulevard. I'm not here to speak against it or for it. I just want to know if it, on this case, anybody get paid? Any council members get paid for your vote?
I'm sorry, Mr. Crenshaw, the council's not able to deliberate with you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Again, any speakers in favor of the CPC recommendation to deny the item? No further speakers, by the Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Allen.
At this time, I move to follow the recommendation of the CPC and deny this SUP.
I have a motion to deny, Mr. Allen, and second by Mr. Newman. Any further discussion? I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Thank
you. Madam Secretary.
We move now to item number 53, a public hearing regarding an application for and an ordinance granting an amendment to create two tracts within Planned Development District Number 183, for an MU-3 mixed-use district uses on the southeast corner of North Haskell Avenue as North Central Expressway.
Madam Mayor, we sent 19 notices, property owners within 500 feet of their request, received one reply in favor, no reply in opposition. It would require a majority to approve this.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve the item? Any speakers in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve? Any speakers in favor of the CPC recommendation to approve the item? Please state your name and address for the record, and you will be allowed 2 minutes to speak.
Mayor Pro Tem, members of the council, Jimmy Schnurr, 3400 Carlisle Street, Dallas, Texas, here on behalf of the property owner. We're in agreement with the staff recommendation and Planning Commission recommendation for approval with the additional items that we previously discussed, and we're here to answer any questions. Thanks.
Ms. Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to close the public hearing and approve the amendments to Plan Development District Number 183 with the following changes. Habitable space is not permitted above 546 feet in height. Any additions to the tower that exists on October 14, 2009 must have the same facade materials as the existing tower. A minimum of 10% of a lot or building site must be open space meeting the following requirements. Open space must be a contiguous area that is a minimum of 150 square feet. Parkways may not be counted toward the required open space. Open space must be unobstructed to the sky and contain no structures. Open space must be landscape areas that may include turf, ground cover, shrubs, trees, seasonal plantings, or a combination of these materials. The Tract 1 development plan and Tract 2 landscape plan must include 1, the location of the open space on each lot or building site, and 2, a table showing the square footage of each lot or building site and the open space square footage provided for that lot.
All right, it's been moved to second.
Second.
All right, it's been moved to second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Move approval. All right, Madam Secretary.
Item number 54. Is a public hearing regarding an application for and an ordinance granting a CS commercial service district on property zoned an R-7.5A single family district, an ordinance granting a specific use permit for commercial motor vehicle parking, and a resolution accepting deed restrictions volunteered by the applicant on the property on the north side of CF Hahn Freeway east of Silverado Drive. We do have...
Mr. Mayor, we sent 16 notices to property owners within 300 feet of their request, received 1 reply in favor and 3 replies in opposition.
Thank you. We do have one speaker signed up on this item, Brian Shields. Please state your name and address for the record, sir.
My name is Brian Shields, 7026 Chantilly Lane, Dallas, Texas. I'd like to voice my support for the CPC recommendation of approval on this matter. That despite the site in question being within 500 feet of a residential district, consideration by the developer, property owner has been made for adequate open space, space for buffer, and to include an 8-foot fence. I believe this is a positive economic activity for the city of Dallas. And I also understand that it is in accordance with, well, in concordance with, the City of Dallas' master plan. All right, thank you.
Are there any speakers in the audience that would like to speak in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve the item? Any speakers in opposition? Any speakers in favor of the CPC recommendation? Please state your name and address for the record, sir.
Good afternoon, Mayor Pro Tem and members of the City Council. My name is Ramon Aranda. I reside at 2946 South Sunbeck Circle in Farmers Ranch, and I'm representing the applicant. I am respectfully requesting that this case be postponed for 60 days in order for the ownership to be complete of this property. And therefore, we could finish the preparation for the deed restriction. Do you have any questions? I'll be here. Thank you.
Yeah.
Are there any other speakers that would like to speak on the item that was just read into the record? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Atkins.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, on this item 54, in case number Z089-196, I move to leave the public hearing open and hold this case under advisement to December 9th on 2009 City Council public hearing.
Second.
All right, it's been moved to second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, Madam Secretary.
Thank you. Item number 55 and 56 needs to be considered collectively and will be read into the record simultaneously. Item number 55 is a public hearing on the proposed City of Dallas Fiscal Year 2009-2010 Urban Land Bank Demonstration Program Plan. Item number 56 is authorized approval of the City of Dallas Fiscal Year 2009-2010 Urban Land Bank Demonstration Program Plan. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak on the item that was just read into the record? Item 55. Any speakers that would like to speak on item 55? No speakers. Mr. Mayor?
All right. Is there a motion?
So moved.
All right. Second?
Second.
All right. Move a second. Will you want to speak? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Madam Secretary.
Item number 57 is a public hearing regarding an ordinance amending the comprehensive plan of the City of Dallas to incorporate the UNT Dallas Area Plan, Vision and Policy Plan, and a resolution adopting the UNT Dallas Area Plan Implementation Program for the area generally located along Interstate Highway 35 to the west, Interstate Highway 20 to the south, Tracy Road to the east, and the Laurel Land Road to the north. Councilmember Atkins, I'm sorry, this is a public hearing. Are there any individuals that would just like to speak on the item 57 that was just read into the record? Any speakers on item 57? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Councilman Atkins.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, on this particular item, there have been many debate between the CPC and also staff. And what I'd like to do is Ron the Tensor here? And since Ron is the chair of economic development, what I'd like to... Yep, I disposed. Okay, thank you, Ron. What I'd like to do is move, I would like to move to leave this public hearing open, hold this case under advisement to December 9th, 2009, the City Council public hearing. I am requesting that this item be placed on the next available City Council Economic Development Committee agenda for consideration prior to December 9th. So, Ron Ashton, could we look at this?
Absolutely, and I'll second that, Mr. Ashton.
Thank you very much.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor? Opposed?
Item number 58 and 59 need to be considered collectively and will be read into the record at a single time. Item number 58 is a public hearing on an amendment to tax increment financing reinvestment zone number 10, Southwestern Medical TIF District, project plan and reinvestment zone financing plan. Two, number one, increase the total budget by $9,131,822. Number two, expand the economic development grant program to allow for grants or loans supporting higher density development and job creation. Number three, correct the 2008 base value for the expanded boundary by $1,651,102. And number four, make corresponding modifications to the budget and Southwestern Medical TIF District project plan. Number 59 is an ordinance amending ordinance numbers 25965, 26204, and 27433, previously approved by the City Council on April 27, 2005, January 11, 2006, and December 10, 2008, respectively. Two, number one, increase the total budget by $9,131,822. Number two, expand the economic development grant program to allow for grants or loans supporting higher density development and job creation. Number three, correct the 2008 base value for the expanded boundary by $1,651,102. And number four, make corresponding modifications to the budget and Southwestern Medical TIF District project plan. Are there any individuals that would like to speak on item number 58? Any speakers on item 58? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much.
Motion on 58, 59?
Move to approve.
Move to approve. Second.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. 60, 61, please.
Item number 60 and 61 need to be considered collectively. Item number 60 is authorized number one, an amendment to the Southwestern Medical TIF District Grant Program to broaden the list of eligible expenditures, and number two, a development agreement with Amarone LP for the development of the Butler Project, located in the Southwestern Medical TIF District in an amount not to exceed $7,650,000 from the Southwestern Medical TIF revenues. Item number 61 is a resolution declaring the intent of tax increment financing reinvestment zone number 10, Southwestern Medical TIF District, to reimburse Amarone LP in an amount not to exceed $7,650,000 for certain improvements related to the development of the Butler Project in the Southwestern Medical TIF District.
Speakers?
No hearing. Are there any individuals that would like to speak on the item?
Yes.
Thank you. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Elio Ciccatelli. I'm with Mockingbird Building Group, Director of Development, and I'm just here to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you.
Any other speakers on the item that was just read into the record? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Madrona, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This project will transform or help the transformation of the medical district, so therefore I am moved to approve both items.
Second. Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. It's now 2:18. We've got two more items on the agenda. Those both regard appointments of boards and commissions. The city secretary has requested that we go into executive session for agenda item number 43 under personnel section 551.074 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to discuss the appointment of Jay Neri, nominee to the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center Board, and agenda item 46 under personnel section 551.074 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to discuss the appointment of Stephen S. Harris, nominee to the Board of Adjustment. We'll go into executive session. I don't anticipate that this will be very long, so hopefully in the next 15-20 minutes, we'll be back. What we'll do is we'll do the executive session in the back room, so we go back there right away. And then after that, we'll come back, we'll have to deal with these two items, and we'll go to afternoon speakers and we'll complete the agenda. It's already done. You were out of the room, so I assumed you were leaving because of your conflict.
You didn't know?
Okay, so let's, we're in recess now. If we could go back right away, we'll get these two out of the way and then come back in. Thank you.
Recess for executive at 2:19.
Item 46 is an ordinance waiving the qualification restriction of Section 814A4 of the Dallas City Code, which prohibits an appointee of a board from being an adversary party to a pending litigation or claim against a city or city employee except for eminent domain proceedings. For Stephen Harris, a current member and renominee of the Board of Adjustment Financing. No cost consideration to the city. Mr. Allen?
Mayor, I move for approval of agenda item number 46.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
You have the board's permission. Now we'll go to item 43, which is the board's permission.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your board nominees for individual appointments begin with nominees to the Automated Red Light Enforcement Commission. Is Jessica Lynn Sepulveda, nominated by Councilmember Salazar. To the Animal Shelter Commission, Deborah D. Hicks is nominated by Councilmember Hill. Mary Spencer is nominated by Mayor Leppert. Both will fill the general public slot. To the Board of Adjustment, Christian Chernock is nominated by Councilmember Hazza to Panel B. Stephen S. Harris is nominated by Councilmember Allen to Panel A. To the Cultural Affairs Commission, Matilda B. Laurie is nominated by Councilmember Hill to fill the Interested Citizen slot. Lark Montgomery is nominated by Councilmember Coop to fill the Interested Citizen slot. To the Community Development Commission, Pam Gerber is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. To the City Plan and Zoning Commission, Tom Luter is nominated by Councilmember Allen. To the Dallas Citizens Police Review Board, you have Phil Foster, nominated by Councilmember Hill, and Thomas Jefferson, nominated by Councilmember Allen. To the Judicial Nominating Commission, Jeffrey H. Rezanski is nominated by Councilmember Margolin to fill the Citizen at Large slot. To the Municipal Library Board, Maureen Jones, nominated by Councilmember Hasso. James Edgar Ed Palmer is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. To the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center Board, Arthur F. Joe is nominated by Councilmember Cadane.
Park and Recreation Board nominated is Tom Baker by Mayor Leppert. To the Permit and License Appeal Board nominated is Carol A. Vesey by Councilmember Coop. To the Senior Affairs Commission, Geraldine McDaniel is nominated by Councilmember Salazar, and Frank H. Pounders is nominated by Councilmember Allen. To the South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund Board, Josh Womack is nominated by Councilmember Margolin and fills a citizen at large community service slot. Mr. Mayor, that concludes your nomination.
Motion, Mr. Allen. Mr. Cadine, seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed to order? That brings us to the conclusion of our agenda. We'll do our afternoon speakers, Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your afternoon speakers will begin with Elijah McGrew, followed by John Mosher. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant at Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Again, your first speaker is Elijah McGrew. Elijah McGrew, not present. John Rocher, not present. B.M. Randolph, not present. Clyde Williams, thank you, Mr. Williams. If you'll please come forward, read your name and address into the record, and you do have 3 minutes to speak.
Good morning. My name is Clyde Williams. My address is 10204 Reed Oak, Dallas, Texas. I guess my concern here today is about environmental quality as far as health is concerned. I've studied environmental science for about 20 years, and I started my own business, Global Environmental Construction Consulting and Testing. And through green testing, I've discovered that there is and also studying Christian Science, I discovered that there was a green issue that needed to be addressed as far as chemical burnings of the carbon emissions in our environment. NF3s is nitrogen trifluoride, which are in our air. And you have to excuse me, I'm not a very good speaker. This is my very first speech. But my concern, I've discovered that you people in this room are hurting people in this city. And I'm not happy about it. Not at all. Including myself. You're damaging people's minds. You're basically raping people of their souls by extremely low frequencies from your wire. And once that frequency is caught into a chemical bond and it's caught into that back into that frequency, you can use that frequency just to move energy around the world. That's right here. And that happens to me every day. And it's happening to a whole community of people, and you people here are sitting here playing it like it's a game. You go into people's heads, you mess with their minds, you reprogram them, and then you send them out in the street like bombs. I work downtown Dallas for Region 6, American Electric Power. I was responsible for the total Region 6 area. And I discovered through that process that you people of Dallas members are allowing chemicals to be dumped into water. You're allowing chemicals to be released in the air, and then you connect it to a Wi-Fi, and then you control people with it. And then you sit in the jail, something they can do every day. That is what you can do.
We appreciate you being with us. Thank you very much.
And if I may continue.
Yeah, I'm afraid your time's come up. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Kim Taylor is the next speaker.
Yes, my name is Kim Taylor, and I am here on behalf of my father, John Bennett. He is a 74-year-old retired police officer from the city of Dallas, and he owns a piece of property that is located at 3450 South Trunk Avenue. The property is landlocked. I have some handouts if anybody needs to see them for the property. There is a piece of property that is right next door to it that is owned by the Fair Park, and it is called Putnam Place. It has a driveway that they have added in since Dart landlocked the property in the back, and they have subdivided it for homes. Those lots are too small for us to be able to go across to get access to our property, which is what Dart recommended when we told them that they've landlocked our property. Our property, according to the map, is the only one that seems to have been affected by this landlock, and that is called inverse possession. That is something that is unconstitutional. It's inverse condemnation, and that just means that the government, which in this case I guess would be DART, has taken the property because they have denied us access to the property. And we have received a letter back from DART that said that the property never had a road, a legal road. This is not true. If it was not a legal road, I don't think that the city of Dallas would have been collecting taxes for 37 years with an address that is Trunk Avenue, if Trunk Avenue never existed, nor do I think they would have made street signs for Trunk Avenue, nor do I think they would have paid all the money to concrete the street or to put in all the drainage ditches that they had on the street. The MapQuest, if you put in the address in MapQuest, it's going to tell you to turn right onto Metropolitan Avenue, and then to turn right again onto South Trunk Avenue and end at 3050 South Trunk Avenue. You can't do that because DART has put the rail through there, and they've got a 8 to 10 foot cyclone Cox fence up, and there's no way you can turn right on Trunk Avenue. So not only can we not get to the property to use the property, but we can't get to the property to even clean it up. And it has some gorgeous 200-foot type pecan trees on the property, and someone has been living underneath those trees, and there are bottles.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Ozumba Lunk. The speaker after Mr. Lunch will be Stephen Meeks, followed by Marvin Crenshaw.
Merrill City Council, my name.
What?
Right. Merrill City Council, my name is Ozumba Owagalu Lunch, Chief and Minister. Also, I'm a candidate for Constable in Precinct 5. Mayor, what this criminal justice system, investigators, DA office, state prosecuting attorneys, the unreliable, corrupt witnesses, the criminals and their associates and their partners in crime have done to me and my family is criminal. My son has been in PN now for 10 years for something that he didn't do. He tried to give me months in jail for defending my life that was thrown out. It was found to be untrue. Three or four young guys going around saying I'm chasing them all the time. I don't think I look that ignorant. But anyway, you know, we have 2 million people in the penal institution, I understand. 1 million are black African-Americans. The others are mixed. There's too many African-Americans. 1 million African-Americans in the penal institution. The other million is mixed. I come down here trying to resolve a problem. You all did me wrong. You don't want to admit it. I've been to the police academy. They have a social degree in police science. I'm T-Cross certified and a private investigator. I should have been released on my own recognizance because I had never done anything before. I shouldn't have to pay bail, bond, or anything. But I did. You know, just like I said, what you all did to me and my family was wrong. You put me in unsanitary conditions. I was sick. I had cancer. And you all didn't care. But now I talk to you all. You don't say nothing. You don't care. But I had to go to the ultimate law maker, and that's God. God is going to take care of it because you're going to find out things are going to happen to you. You'll see it. I pray on it, and I know God is going to help me. I think the federal government needs to come to Dallas. Dallas is crooked and corrupt and racist. You know, we have a lot of people here, the poor people, black and white and Mexican. They come here to work like right now. You're talking about sending them back and all this stuff. Man, I knew years ago that they were here illegally. You knew it, too. They did all your work. Now you want to send them back. These are good citizens. If they're not criminals, they should be made to be citizens because we need good people. But you do work people and you want to get rid of them when you don't need them anymore. That's wrong. Just like I said, I'm giving it to God. God is going to take care of you all done me wrong. I have a problem with you. You don't want to straighten up things. You all make problems because you're too arrogant. You're too proud. The federal government needs to come to the city and see what happens to poor people. I mean black, Mexican, and white. Because the minority who are the rich, they are taking over. They have become the majority. It has always been like this. This liberty, justice, quiet for all is untrue statements. You never have been said.
We appreciate you being with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next speaker God bless is Stephen Meek, followed by Marvin Crenshaw.
My name is Stephen Meeks, and I'm going to basically touch on what I spoke about a couple of, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And in the photographs, one thing you'll see are culverts that are covered with screens to prevent trash from getting into storm drains that would eventually end up in the ocean. And the other trash is on a creek in Oak Cliff where bottles have collected. Both location points are about, I would say, about 1,000 feet apart. And I'm sure none of you would want that in your backyard. However, one of my good friends in her backyard, that's what she was looking at. I don't know how those bottles ended up in the creek like that, but it's unfortunate. When I was here the last time, I think I gave a couple of statistics about plastics in the ocean and the UN, how they have estimated something like, I think, 50,000 pieces of plastic per square mile are in every part of the ocean these days. When I was probably about 10 years old, I went on a deep sea fishing trip with my dad. And as he finished his lunch, he took his sandwich wrapper and probably aluminum can or something and just threw it over on the side of the boat. And I looked at him, and I just wondered. I couldn't say anything to my father. Even though years later, I guess I had. But it really struck me when I saw him, and I wondered, well, why would you throw that trash overboard like that? I mean, there's trash cans on the boat. And even though it's so typical of a lot of ocean-going vessels to throw their trash overboard, it's not something that's supposed to be done. And this particular creek that is in my neighborhood is just one of probably dozens, if not more than 100 creeks in this city. And as I mentioned before, everything that ends up in the creek, for the most part, that floats, especially if it's plastic, is going to end up in the Trinity River, and finally, probably in the Gulf of Mexico. And if the city of Dallas really wants to be an environmentally conscious city, it's going to have to address some of these issues. It's going to have to. No matter how small they seem or how small it may seem that I may be coming to you here speaking about this. And the last time I was here, I asked about something that could be done to hopefully prevent this.
Thank you very much for your time.
And what I would like is to get an answer
Thank you.
In regards to that.
Secretary. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Your next speaker is Marvin Crenshaw, followed by Gwen Wooten.
Marvin Crenshaw, 5134 Malcolm X Boulevard. I want to read you something from the City Council Rules of Procedures. Section 6.3, as far as citizen speakers are concerned, 4F, as far as open microphones. The City Council will provide an opportunity for citizens to present concerns or address issues that are not matters for consideration. This is on a posted meeting agenda during an open microphone period at City Council meeting, which means we basically can talk about many things. And I also want to right now give credit to Brother Stephen Meeks. He's always been a person that's been in the forefront of the movement in here in Dallas as far as environment is concerned. In the 70s, he was the first vegetarian that I had ever met, and he was telling us about food, which all of us said, this man got to be crazy talking about we can't eat certain things. And most of us, some of us moved in that direction, and we see some of the same things that he was talking about were true and important. But I also want to just talk about certain things, Mr. Mayor. The reason that I was asking those questions this morning during the earlier session is because of the fact that corruption trial had an impact upon the citizens of Dallas, and particularly in the southern half of the city. I ride buses, and people were talking about that trial all the time. There were people who had been involved in the system as far as being in prison, who were just laying out different things of what might happen and what could happen. But Mr. Mayor, this is going to be very important because some of us believe that there's a move that's being made to provide obstacles towards 14-1 being fully implemented and being the system that we have here at this present time, and that you want to move toward a strong mayor system. And we do not want that issue regarding the corruption trial to be used to impose a strong mayoral system on us. The people in that trial with Don Hill and others, it was always my opinion that they were innocent until they were proven guilty. You know, they had a right to go through that process, and even right now they have a right to go through the appeals process. But we do not want that to be used to stop 14-1. I mean, people fought for that all over this city. It was basically a 30-year struggle from 1971 up until the time that this first council was here. And people fought for that. And no one is going to go for someone that we find out is taking money illegally, and no one in our community was falling for any use of the race card. So, and we also not going to fall for anyone to come in and try to use this to put a strong mayoral system on us. But we don't know what's going to
happen. Thank you very much. We appreciate you being with us.
We don't even know if we got a city manager or a city attorney.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Gwen Wooten.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Wooten. I live at 1000 Christopher, Dallas, Texas. Y'all are down me. I don't understand what's going on down here. I really don't. I've been coming down here since you was down there on Hartwood. And if 14-1 was for representation for the citizens of Dallas, we're definitely not receiving it. I I don't think citizens in this city has received anything from y'all. The only people getting something is some students that don't go to the law school, some businesses that's robbing people, because these communication businesses, AT&T, Warner Bros., all of them robbing us, just stealing from us. TXU got people working in the Philippines. We paying for the lights. Y'all down here representing millionaires, eating at this union station and drinking wine and having a good time. 5 members on a committee. We are 14 districts. We need 14 members on these committees so that our people will know what's going on. When you have a city council meeting, you're supposed to have a briefing. You're supposed to have a briefing and a city council meeting. Not a briefing 1 week and a city council meeting next week. That's why y'all know what's going on. And the majority of people who chair these committees is North Dallas. Inside the Southern State, I don't live up that up. The Southern State, y'all ain't getting nothing. Y'all should really be in an uproar. And just because you're dressing like them and got some new shoes on now, don't mean you're part of them. Because they using you just like they did down here. He was sitting down here, and him and Mary Sue called me a man.
They did that's the last time you can direct it at me, but not at anybody else.
Well, Mary Leffert, Mary Sue, and Don.
Our next speaker, ma'am.
Your next speaker is Jarlene Hollins. Ms. Hollins, if you'll please come up to the podium. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Geraldine Gates Hollins, and I'm here today to talk about the supporters of Judge Laura Christmas Hopkins. I've been before this council many times, talking about my grandson and how he was placed in a home where he's being molested, raped, sodomized. And introduced into the homosexual lifestyle. And someone has taken offense with that. Well, I'm offended by the ones who would sit here and not even order an investigation into it, not even look into it, and even deny me the right to have police general operating procedures. And I'm not here to talk about it. Fuss about today because I filed a complaint. I'm starting here. You know, charity begins at home, spreads abroad. So I started right here in the city with this complaint about violating free speech, my free speech. 3 times I have been taken out of this chamber because someone didn't want to hear what I had to say. I have a right as a citizen to come before this council and speak whether you like it or not. Because I don't like what you're doing. And I have a right to tell you that. So I filed a complaint with your Ethics Commission. For being hauled out of here for nothing. And it's all out in the open now. Everything I was trying to say is all out in the open. And I'm going to be thankful today for the voice for telling the truth. It's all out in the open. Everything I was trying to say, see, God got a way. It ain't your way. It's not my way, but it's the right way. And I thank him. And God's going to bring all of this out. He's going to rescue my grandson because I'm not going to stop. And I think we need to start filing on council members who disrespect us while we're speaking. But we can't talk while you're speaking. You shouldn't talk while we're speaking. And I'm going to make sure that I file complaints. So test me and see. And then we'll take it all away to the federal court if necessary. And you can have your minutes back, Mayor Leffert.
Thank you. Appreciate you being with us.
That concludes your speakers, Mr. Mayor.
We're recessed. We're adjourned. 3:27. Thank you.